The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
All right, 7:30 on this Wednesday morning. You're welcome along to OTB AM. We've got a big show coming your way. We've got Dublin's Brian Howard. We've got Kieran Donaghy. We've got Mayo's Dana Finn. They're the GAA voices coming up between now and 9:30. But Kenny Cunningham will be leading the way in about 15 minutes' time because, boy, oh boy, is this a wobble from Liverpool Football Club. Tommy Rooney, a very good morning to you.
Morning, all.
Maybe Liverpool will never win a game again.
That could be it. Like, it's 3 defeats from 4. This is just remarkable.
Really, it kind of is. Like, the
unprecedented for one of the greatest teams we've ever seen.
The whole FA Cup thing, obviously, does not matter one bit. It matters somewhat.
It kind of mattered last night.
Well, it certainly mattered that they were 2-0 down because Jurgen Klopp brings Roberto Firmino and Mo Salah off the bench. You wonder why they didn't start the game if he was really going for this. It certainly garnered a hell of a lot more importance after what happened at the weekend and after, I would say, what happened against Atletico. It's a more important game than a Premier League encounter this weekend, I would have thought. But yet, he didn't start his full team. Maybe he felt that the kids deserved a chance after getting this far in the FA Cup, and I think that's fair enough. But I still think you have to ask yourself the question, how do we arrest this wobble? And when you're going to Stamford Bridge, playing your best starting team is probably the best way to start a wobble or to arrest a wobble. And maybe playing someone like Alisson would have been the way forward at the very least.
So you think they should have played the full team last night and rested players against Bournemouth who were struggling at the weekend?
I think if it comes to it, yes. If it comes to it, yeah.
Atletico is obviously the biggest game on the horizon.
Yeah, like I think Atletico obviously is the best game on is the biggest game on the horizon. There's no question about that. I just think that when you lose your unbeaten record at the weekend, when that invincible tag has gone out the window, you suddenly turn to your two other targets, which is the FA Cup, which is the Champions League. No question about it. If they beat Atletico and they progress, everything that happened last night is background noise. It doesn't matter. It's actually kind of, if they're going to make a good tilt at this Champions League again, last night will be just a footnote in what was an insignificant wobble because they'll be back on track next week.
I'll be honest, I was a little surprised that Van Dijk started and Mane started last night. Just going off what Klopp has done over the last number of weeks. Did you expect him to... I was surprised he played such a strong defence. Like Robertson, Van Dijk and Gomez were all there, 3 out of 4.
Maybe he looked at the weekend and the lack of a Joe Gomez was one of the reasons floated for why they were so poor against Watford. I know most of the people we've had on the show have said that Dejan Lovren has been unfairly scapegoated as a result of what happened on Saturday night. But maybe Jurgen Klopp actually saw some truth in that, that actually it was time to just bring Joe Gomez back in, solidify things in the centre of your defence. And going up against someone like Olivier Giroud, perhaps you won't have too many issues if you have Joe Gomez and Virgil van Dijk there, especially if Vandy Robertson is one of the fullbacks. In fairness, like, I mean, when you look at the back four, Williams as well, who comes in from Trent Alexander-Arnold, I couldn't really fault him last night. I know Chelsea tried to test him time and time again early on in the game, but I didn't think he had a bad evening whatsoever. So it's hard to actually pinpoint the individual failings of this Liverpool team, yet they could have lost the game 4-0 and possibly should have lost the game 4-0 with those two sitters that Chelsea missed in the second half.
So I missed the first half. I came off the training pitch last night and I saw a text from you saying we're leaving with Liverpool before I'd even checked the score. So I had no idea whether they were winning 5-0 or they were losing 2 or 3-0. But Chelsea missed a lot of sitters.
Yeah, but like as I say, those two chances, the Pedro chance and the Giroud chance off the bar, which would have been an unbelievable goal. That was all in the second half. Like, you had a performance last night from Ross Barkley, which we haven't seen in quite some time. It's like there was eyebrows raised when he signed for Chelsea. You look at this Chelsea team at the moment and you wonder if he will be there for the long term, if these kids turn out to be as good as they turn out to be. And then, yes, yesterday, he was possibly the best player on the pitch. Now, I know Billy Gilmore got the Man of the Match award, the 18-year-old football manager, Regen, currently playing for Chelsea Football Club.
He looked exceptional, Gilmore.
He does. Like, he's 5'5", 18, as I said, and looks... Hey, to be fair, you're actually surprised that he's 18. You're like, this kid is clearly 12. Like, well, how is he even actually allowed onto a senior pitch? And it just a proper I don't want to say a holding midfield masterclass, but there was a lot of the defensive attributes on show, especially in that first half. And like he was interviewed by the BBC afterwards, and they were like, Gary Lineker, Ian Wright have been singing your praises up in the studio. This kid is like 18, he's never seen these guys play.
He's like, yeah,
they're good players. It means a lot for me to get compliments from them. Yeah. But this guy, I think he really kind of made his name in the Toulon tournament in 2018. For Scotland, of course, and has just been spoken about glowingly in terms of sources from Chelsea over the last few years, given his chance because he's good enough. And now we see that he has arrived. He was absolutely brilliant.
He looked really assured, yeah.
He really did. But I still think... Ross Barkley was possibly the best player on the pitch.
On Barkley, Barkley's form in early 2018 kind of got him back into the England setup, and he's playing quite well. And in this season, it's been touch and go again. But what a goal. The drive to take him from, deep midfield up to strike that ball into the back of the net. It was Rooney-esque.
Mm.
But he just doesn't show it often enough.
No, he doesn't. The worst thing that can possibly happen for Liverpool at this point now is Manchester City win the Champions League.
Right.
And the FA Cup. So the FA Cup and or the Champions League. If they go on to do that this season, that's a disaster for Liverpool. Because
so you're saying the treble? A treble.
It will be a treble if they obviously won the FA Cup and the Champions League. But I think even the Carabao Cup and the Champions League, all of a sudden then you're talking about Manchester City having had this amazing season when Liverpool were supposed to be the only English football club that we were supposed to say good things about this season. It was looking like a terrible, terrible year for Manchester City. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win the Champions League, but you look at the state, look at the situation, first of all, that they're in their tie.
Mm.
Hugely positive, will probably go through. Then you look at the state that Barcelona are in. Juventus did not look good in their first leg. Bayern Munich have looked outstanding, and who knows where Liverpool are going to be at after their tie against Atletico, potentially not even in the competition. So there was certainly a lot more hope for Manchester City to go on and win this competition, and you just wonder how the view of the big teams in English football changes if that is how the year ends up, because we still know Liverpool are going to win the Premier League. We'll be comparing them in the same season to a team who potentially might do a double. So it's going to be a very, very interesting few weeks, and it just heightens the importance of Anfield next weekend. There's every chance, and I suspect this will happen, it will be another famous night at Anfield, and Liverpool could beat them 2 or 3-0 and will progress
Wednesday
through.
Wednesday night against Atletico,
The ship has just turned around and we're fine. So
it's the 4th of March. City are playing Liverpool in the Etihad on the 5th of April. So mm-hmm. by then, we'll know whether or not your theory is about to hold any truth.
Well, I don't think you could seriously make a case that Manchester City are the best team in English football after this Premier League season. I think Liverpool have proved that at the point. I just think it just skews the domination that Liverpool might have had over English football if Manchester City managed to add another title to their Carabao Cup crown at the weekend. So a huge, huge few weeks. What then happens if Atletico actually win next weekend? Is it more than a wobble at that point?
Yeah, it has to be seriously deflating for Liverpool fans, because sure, the title is wrapped up, but what do they do for the next 2 months after that?
They just celebrate the title, don't they?
Really?
What else can you do?
I know Liverpool fans are going to be good at celebrating the title once it's confirmed, but I just put up last night on my own Instagram feed that what a losing streak this is for Liverpool, and I had about eight of my pals who are Liverpool fans biting already. It's been quite precious.
I think most of the people will say that it's a wobble, but I think anybody who's saying that it's a losing streak or will they ever win a game again, we're obviously joking.
It is a streak. It's 3 from 4.
You've got to allow people to sort of find the funny side in all of this as well, given it was such a flawless start to the season. And I will say, let's cool the jets until the Atletico tie is done, because really this is what this entire month revolves around for Liverpool Football Club. But it's been a very, very interesting couple of days, that's for sure. Let's just bring you through what's happening this morning in the world of sport. Liverpool is a top story this morning, really. A third defeat in 4 games has cost them a place in the FA Cup 6th round. It was Willian, goals in either half from Willian and Ross Barkley, giving Chelsea a 2-0 win at Stamford Bridge. Then some of the other games last night, Newcastle beat West Brom 3-2. You also had Republic of Ireland striker David McGoldrick opening the scoring for Sheffield United. They needed extra time to win 2-1 at Reading. Now, Tottenham manager Jose Mourinho says Troy Parrott will be on the bench for tonight's FA Cup 5th round tie with Norwich. Manchester City are away to Sheffield Wednesday. We'll come back to that Troy Parrott story very shortly indeed, because there's some interesting audio on Troy Parrott. Meanwhile, Leicester welcome Chappie beside Birmingham to the King Power Stadium. And then the quarter-final draw will take place after tonight's games. In rugby, the Six Nations meeting with France could hinge on a meeting scheduled to take place in Paris today. Earlier this week, competition organisers said all remaining games would go ahead when time allows. So Saturday's clash of Ireland and Italy, still the only game be postponed. So we'll know basically this afternoon whether or not the France game goes ahead. Munster under 20 final this evening as well in football. Kerry against Cork in that one. 7:30 is throw-in time there, and then a 7 race car at Clonmel this afternoon. First going to post at 2 p.m. Let's tell you what's coming up this morning on OTBAM. Sports pages coming your way momentarily. Kenny Cunningham at 10 to 8 chatting about last night's game at Stamford Bridge. Top 5 stories at 8:05. And then I went out to meet Brian Howard at Parnell Park yesterday. We'll bring you that interview at 8:20. Sports news at 8:35 with Tom Malone. Dana Finn, the Mayo footballer and Ireland basketballer, will be joining us at 8:40 for a chat. And Kieran Donaghy will be up after 9 talking football. Rhianna Jarrett then has been in conversation with Shane Hannan. Bring you that piece at 9:20. Before all that, it is time for the back pages. OTB AM. We will start with the Irish Times this morning. And their headline is: Barkley and Chelsea raise their game as Liverpool misfire again. Barney Ronay's piece reads: Lampard packs the flanks with speed and hustle to bring about another big wobble. Chelsea took their chances in wild and open game, and it paid off in spades. Then Privileged One Parrott will be on bench again. As I say, we will bring you the audio of that very shortly indeed. He's a very young kid with a lot to learn, says Jose Mourinho, and says he is the privileged one to get opportunities like this because he will be on the bench tonight. And then Guardiola says City want more cup glory. They're up against Sheffield Wednesday tonight in the FA Cup.
The Mirror back page leads with Adrian. Calamity keeper puts Klopp's Reds in a rocky situation as Willian and Barkley deliver knockout blows and dump Pool out of FA Cup. Also, Mick McCarthy will not alter playoff plans yet. Must have been a bit of an odd afternoon for Mick McCarthy yesterday.
Going to a draw for a competition he won't be managing in?
Receiving the draw of the teams in it and trying to make comment about something that he's not going to be involved in, yeah. And also, brawl blown out of proportion. GAA do not need to take action. Dublin star Brian Howard insists the Omagh Tunnel brawl has been blown completely out of proportion. We've got Brian Howard coming up a little later this morning with you on.
The Irish Examiner this morning reads: Invincible no more. Barkley's bite ends Liverpool's cup hopes. Donal Lenihan, meanwhile, is writing about a postponed game in 1985, which led to one of Ireland's best squad-building sessions. Caught in the act, Dublin's Greg Kennedy on controversy he would rather forget. He was doing the rounds yesterday, while Ricken's reward is the headline on how the Cork manager is out to make new memories. Target date, McCabe wants Ireland to find a finishing touch against Greece, and Kieran Shannon is writing about a bitter row over eligibility and how that souring Super League title chase. Inside the Irish Examiner, very quick story just to bring you, because unfortunately it doesn't make our top 5 stories this morning and I'd hate to see this fall between the cracks. Cremorne's Cow Splat Bingo, a chance to win some moolah. So this is something that we have covered extensively on the show in the past about different GAA clubs, different county boards who have come up with unique ways of making money for their county board or their GAA club. You can go and you can sell a house. There was a winning J1 competition brought to you. There's often quite a bit of winning livestock.
Curduff had a great one a couple of years ago. Did they sell a casket that got sold at the end?
A plot of land in a graveyard.
That was it. That's a great prize.
Great prize, in fairness. Don't have to worry about that. Stephen Barry in the Irish Examiner this morning: A Kerry GAA club are hoping their new fundraising idea will prove a cash cow as they look to upgrade their playing facilities. There's plenty of puns in this piece. Cremorne are holding a cow splat bingo competition as they bid to beef up their fundraising potential. On St Patrick's Day, their pitch, more used to hosting All-Ireland winners Dunica Walsh and Sean O'Sullivan, will be transformed into a giant bingo card or a manure matrix with a cow set loose to roam the grounds. Whenever nature calls, the winning square will scoop £500 with the 8 surrounding square, the collateral damage, taking €50 each. It will take place on Monday, March 16th, where ticket holders will be randomly allocated a square number. So they've been saying they've been looking for a fundraiser for a while. Their facilities need to be upgraded. It's a great idea, they said. The community should be engaged. So there you go. Cow's Black Bingo. I've never heard of that one before.
It's a great idea. I've got the Mirror here. Capital crimes. Reds are repeat offenders in London. Ross Barkley celebrating his goal. Move on from Omar Rumble. That's Brian Howard again. And then there's a photo of Raphael van der Vaart up here. Mac not distracted. Mick McCarthy won't be distracted by the growing threat to Ireland's Euro 2020 playoff with Slovakia from the global coronavirus outbreak. And then also, corona shock for England's Vinopola. And just before we finish, that's Mac of Vinopola being put into self-isolation because of the coronavirus. Jose must try harder. So we're going to hear those Mourinho quotes a little later after 8 when Phil Egan's in.
Daily Telegraph this morning is Blue Thunder. Willian and Barkley on target as Klopp's men slump again. You've got that Mac of Vinopola story. And Icemen cometh. Southgate draws chance of revenge.
Got the Guardian here on. Top of Toon. Almiron fires Newcastle past West Brom into the last eight. Your move to Laggy revelling in England's new role as chess master. The Mako Vinopolo self-isolation story. And also Ross Barkley celebrating that wonder goal last night.
The back page of the Herald is Mick McCarthy saying the draw is good for us, but Slovakia's clash on Mick's mind as Coleman ruled out. Talking yesterday about Seamus Coleman and how he will not feature against Slovakia at the end of the month. Brian Howard says tunnel round not too bad. He's playing down the Yoma incident and Poole crash out of cup. That is Kurt Zouma hugging Jurgen Klopp there. Chelsea 2, Liverpool 0, the final score last night.
The Irish Sun are leading with slow and steady. UEFA will leave any decision on moving Ireland's 2020 playoff with Slovakia until the last minute. So they haven't made a call on that one yet, whether it'll be behind closed doors. Here we go again with Troy. It's Jose Mourinho, those quotes that we're going to bring you a little later. And Ross Barkley celebrating that goal last night. No treble.
The London Times goes with Liverpool losing it. Chelsea inflict third defeat in four games for Klopp's team. And England blow as Vinopola self-isolates.
I've got the Racing Post. City should hunt down Owls with ease. So that's tonight's FA Cup fixtures. That's in the back of the Racing Post. And on the front of the Racing Post, it's all going a bit too easily. Santini Gold Cup prep so smooth, says Nicky Henderson.
The Irish Daily Mail goes with KO blow stuns Klopp. Barkley kills off Liverpool treble dream. Parrot blow then, writes Philip Quinn in Amsterdam. No chance for Troy unless he starts for Spurs. So he's featured in two different media outings yesterday. One from Jose Mourinho, one from Mick McCarthy. Mick McCarthy says maybe if he comes off the bench tonight, plays 5 minutes and scores two goals, he will consider him. But really, no chance for him at the moment to feature against Slovakia. And decision day for France-Ireland showdown. Crunch talks today. That is the main story as well on the back of the Irish Independent. Ireland's Paris clash hanging in the balance. So today's meeting is between the French Rugby Federation and the French government. So we knew earlier in the week that the Six Nations are open to the fixture going ahead, but it's not really up to them. It is up to the government who make the final call on all of these things in terms of advising the sporting bodies. Today is when that meeting happens, so we'll know later on. And then Parrot doesn't come close to Ireland call up for playoffs, says Mick McCarthy.
We've got offtheball.com, the lead stories this morning on OTB. There's one, so there's Nicky Brennan speaking last night that if a team is guilty, they should be kicked out. This is on the GAA brawls. Enda McGinley was on as well. There's the Nations League draw. There's also a story there you might be able to see. Republic of Ireland keeper Kieran O'Hara charged with biting opponents. So this story, right? A photo emerged on social media of O'Hara seemingly biting a Peterborough player, Sammy Schmodix, on the arm. Can you see that there?
Mm-hmm.
So he's been charged with violent and improper conduct from the that incident in the 44th minute of that game. So Burton have confirmed that he's been charged with it, and he has until this Friday to respond to the charge and appeal it if he wants to. He's played every single minute of Burton's League One campaign so far this year and has obviously played twice for Ireland under Mick McCarthy.
Right, okay, Jesus. Well, more on that on offtheball.com if you want to check that out. Kenny Cunningham, we'll get his views on what happened to Liverpool last night. Another defeat, three defeats in four games. Kevin Kilbane made his return to the football show last night, and here he is on Ireland's Nations League draw.
As a footballer, if you were going to Slovakia, would you prefer to play a match in front of 2,000-4,000 Irish fans and the Slovakian fans, a rocking stadium, or would you fancy playing it behind closed doors, nobody in there?
I think it would be a huge advantage for us if there was no crowd there. Absolutely would be. Yeah, I do think that. I think we'd all, you know, even when I would have gone away to some of the hostile environments, you look back and you think they were great games to play in, but the home side does get a little bit of momentum from the home crowd's atmosphere that's been generated. So I do. I mean, when you've watched behind closed doors games, Joe, when you've seen them, there's been a number of them that have been played in European competition that we would have covered, I would have covered, and you've watched them, and they're kind of nothing games, they're low key games, they're almost like practice games. that's how they turn up. But this is obviously a little bit different. And I think that would only help us if that were to be the case, if we would go there and we were to play behind closed doors. I think it'd help us, yeah.
Kevin Kilbane there on last night's football show. We'll get to Ireland in just a moment. But Kenny Cunningham, we may start with Liverpool. What a wobble this is, 3 defeats in the last 4. Are you seeing one particular reason why this is happening to them at the moment?
I think it's difficult, Owen, to maybe just pinpoint one particular reason. Obviously, particularly last night, Klopp kind of shuffled the pack, which was pretty obvious. I think you could argue maybe a slight drop-off in performance in terms of lack of focus, which I think, Owen, is almost understandable. Liverpool have been playing at such a high level now, you could argue for the past 12 months, let alone since the start of the season. It almost wouldn't be human if there wasn't to be a slight kind of drop-off in terms of performance at times, particularly now the league is pretty much done. We all know that it's only kind of a matter of time. So I'm just hoping it's the case that the Liverpool players are just kind of regrouping almost mentally prior to this all-important Champions League return leg against Atletico next week. Hopefully that's the case.
Yeah, like I'm sure they have the leaders within the group to be able to arrest this bit of a wobble. Like it might even just be, as you say, a reason of rotation in certain areas, like not having your holy trinity at the back of Gomez, Van Dijk, Alisson on the pitch, Jordan Henderson not being available in front of them. Like when things are going wrong, not having the full availability of the spine of your team doesn't help.
Oh, and absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you wanted to target kind of key areas of the pitch, you'd look maybe the game of the weekend, Watford, Lovren coming in for Van Dijk. For me, that weakens the team. It's a fact. Not a massive drop-off, but it weakens the team. Like I've mentioned before, Henderson doesn't play in centre midfield and they hold the midfield position. From a defensive point of view, it kind of weakens the team. I think we even saw that last night. If you looked at Fabinho gave the first goal away, but that was a little bit unlike him in possession. Kind of took a bad touch and pretty much gave the goal away to Chelsea. But that was quite unusual for Fabinho. But the second half, couple of instances, giving away a clumsy free kick at the edge of the box, early second half, Mount hit the crossbar. And then the second goal, I don't know if you know, was when the ball was, Chelsea won possession 10 yards inside their own half. Barkley had the ball at his feet. If you freeze frame the picture, Fabinho's alongside him. Basically, it's just a foot race. Barkley with the ball at his feet, Fabinho running alongside him. Who can actually get down the pitch quicker? And the answer was Barkley with the ball at his feet. Because he hasn't got the speed, Fabinho, the athleticism of Jordan Henderson, couldn't get back outside. That put Gomez in a difficult situation, 2v1 almost, with Pedro on his outside. Couldn't go and confront Barkley, and the ball's in the end of the net. And nobody's talking about Fabinho's kind of lack of mobility, lack of athleticism in the lead-up to that goal, but you can see it clearly on the television. So if you're talking about those individuals, those small weaknesses and areas in the pitch without their, for me, their strongest 11, then it is actually visible. Oh, and you can see it. And I mean, I'd argue as well that kind of high Liverpool line, which had been evident all season. I think we've spoken about it a couple of times, even actually the very start of the season. The first game against Norwich, it was interesting in terms of that high Liverpool defensive line, which is a great thing because it gets the team up the pitch and keeps everybody nice and compact. But the decision making sometimes of when to hold the line and when to drop into the space, they don't always get that right. Didn't get it right at Watford at the weekend. The last goal started just getting played in behind Van Dijk and Lovren. And again, there was moments last night, especially second half, balls just getting played in behind and Liverpool players just not sensing danger. So all those little things, Owen, small little things, hasn't hurt them dramatically clearly all season. They're going to be league winners. But things you have to be careful for, particularly Champions League, knockout competition against the best in the world. Any kind of these small frailties invariably get exposed. So Liverpool just have to be very careful.
35 long passes from Chelsea last night. They clearly targeted the exact thing that you're talking about there, the sort of weakness that they might have if you get the ball behind that back line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting one. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the Liverpool dressing room training pitch when Klopp or his coaches sit down with Liverpool defenders and they assess the performance, particularly that defensive line, and what they talk about. I mean, clearly they encourage the team to get up the pitch and squeeze, as we've seen. That leaves a lot of grass in behind. That's no problem. But for me, it's the decision-making. Once you squeeze the pitch and you hold your position, what happens after that? When do you keep your defensive line and when do you drop? And too many times this season, I've seen the likes of Van Dijk, Gomez and Lovren, whoever it was, stood facing up the pitch on almost like flat when they should be on the... on the side, actually looking towards their own goal, almost anticipating that ball in behind. Sometimes you don't have to drop on. Obviously, if you've got an opposition player 2 yards offside, no need to drop in there. He's already in an offside position. You can hold your defensive line, and that's a cheap offside. But there's some good players out there who can time their runs in behind, and people can put good quality, can put the balls over the top. We saw the West Ham game the other week. The West Ham signing late in the game. Jared, the new signing, got played in behind Dyke late on, high defensive line. They got away with it. Alisson, great save, which he has done on a number of occasions. I think Liverpool need to get that right on. I still think potentially it could cost them. That's what the likes of Van Dijk and Gomez in particular have. All the defenders have to take responsibility. Communication, good information, squeeze, drop. Just the basic stuff on it really does help. Checking your shoulder, taking pictures all the time, who's making runs, being aware of people around you. They're kind of good, sound, defensive principles. But at times, Liverpool just get a little bit lax thinking, well, we'll squeeze the pitch, we'll be fine. You know, we're good runners, we can all run, we'll get back if there's a danger. Well, the fact is you won't. It doesn't matter how quick you are. If the delivery of the ball over the top's good enough, the timing of the run is good enough into the space in behind, you won't get back. So Liverpool just has to be careful with that.
For sure. Like, just to drill down a little bit further into that, like, you mentioned that this was a talking point at the start of the season. It definitely was. It's a talking point now. So why in the middle do we have this extraordinary defensive run up until the winter break from Liverpool, where they're not conceding goals at all? Because I think at the start of the season, they were conceding but winning. Then they got into a situation where they just weren't conceding after Christmas and at the start of this calendar year. So what's changed in the interim period?
I don't think anything's actually changed in all honesty. For me, it's been evident all during the season. Nice. It hasn't cost them hugely on the terms. If I couldn't point to like a dozen goals and say, look, that's cost you that high line. But there's been instances during games, not like countless times during every single game, but there's been moments during games where I've looked at them and thought, oof, just got to be careful there. Leaving a lot of space in behind, should really be dropping off there. Didn't get away with it at Watford at the weekend, I've just mentioned there. Nearly cost them against kind of Norwich it was a couple of weeks before. I don't know if you remember, a ball over the top as well, just before they scored. And Norwich got in, Alisson pulled off a great save, like in a 2v1 situation, he clawed the ball away. So there's been enough, just enough. It hasn't cost them in terms of necessarily points in the league, but there's been enough situations there where it just, for me anyway, looking at it, make me a little bit nervous. And I think I've always felt the competition where it would come back and hurt them wouldn't be in the league over the course of the season, where they've been too good, playing too well, scoring a hat full of goals and been, you know, absolutely relentless. But during this Champions League, the knockout stages in this Champions League, where every moment really matters, where the tie can really turn on one moment of play, where you can concede a goal and away goal, and that can prove ultimately costly. So that's where I'd be a little bit nervous. It's not been ultra critical, Owen. There's so many qualities that we've all spoken about during the course of the year. But you'd be foolish not to recognise just that maybe, though, that small little chink at time which rears its head across the defensive line. They need to nail that down, and I'd be hoping they'd be having those conversations around the game next Wednesday.
Yeah, to come back to your Fabinho point, Kenny, that idea of him lacking that pace going up against an opponent like Ross Barkley, how does he fix that? How does he like sit deeper in midfield? Because obviously he can't fix his lack of pace against an opponent like Ross Barkley. Is it just a better position and kind of being more cautious of those counter-attacks?
Yeah, better position is right, Owen, in terms of your starting position being a little bit better. If you know you can't, I wasn't the quickest over 20, 30 yards either, Owen, don't get me wrong, but you got to give yourself an extra couple of yards. The problem with Fabinho, it's not just like speed, it's athleticism as well, in terms of ability to change directly quickly. We saw that with kind of the free kick at the edge of the box. He's heading in one direction, he's going to plant his feet and accelerate in the opposite direction. He can't really do it. That's why he kind of lunges into tackles. And when you haven't got that type of pace, you really need to be switched on now in terms of just reading situations, having a really good defensive mindset, anticipating danger, putting yourself into those positions that you were talking about earlier, where you don't get exposed, where you can sense danger, where you don't have to travel too far. You can just step in and intercept. And for me, actually, I don't necessarily see those defensive instincts in Fabinho either. He's a very good footballer, you know, technically kind of very good. He knits things together very well for Liverpool in there. But that lack of athleticism, even looking at him second half, when the ball's not near him, I'm looking at him moving around the pitch. it's a bit of an effort. He kind of drags his feet over the ground. It doesn't fill me with confidence. I do think it's massive they get Henderson back into that team for the game next week. I really do. And again, it's not shoving Fabinho under a bus. I've said this all season. Just feel as if in the big games where they need some of that real defensive kind of noose and that holding midfield position, it's got the legs to explode over 10, 15 yards and put out fours left, right and centre before they get at the Liverpool defensive line. Henderson's absolutely key in that respect. Hopefully they'll have him back next week.
Without him, you'd have to be worried, Kenny, though, wouldn't you? And I guess if he's not available next week and they do end up crashing out of the Champions League, does it put a dampener on this whole season in Liverpool, a little bit for Liverpool? Like, granted, it's still an excellent, excellent season, and it feels stupid to say that out loud, but I suppose it's just been built up into one of these all-time brilliant seasons in terms of potentially one of the best teams we've ever seen in the Premier League era of English football. So what's your take on that?
I think that's the kind of overriding feeling. I think when they get closer to the league title, when they're two games away, one game away, and the atmosphere is electric around Liverpool and Anfield, the place is going to be absolutely rocking. When that league title eventually comes, I think that'll surpass absolutely everything, any kind of little disappointments along the way, even if it's Champions League elimination before them. I think that'll override everything. I mean, the joy amongst the supporters, the atmosphere, it'll be absolutely electric. So I wouldn't go as far as to say that they'd be a real damn squib, but I just think there is a great opportunity for them on this year, which may not be there next year in the Champions League. They're going back-to-back Champions League titles. Every team playing at their best in this competition, the Champions League, at the moment, for me, Liverpool have the edge over absolutely everybody. But the Champions League at this stage of the year is always about finding your form at the back end of the season. Who can hit top level in terms of performance in kind of February, March, April, in May? And if there's a little bit of a drop-off in performance in terms of Liverpool losing one or two key areas in certain areas of the pitch, that could give the advantage to one or two of the other teams, the likes of potentially kind of Bayern Munich, even maybe Manchester City in a little bit of form going into the back end of the season. So yeah, hopefully that won't be the case. I'd love to see them hang around in the competition, Liverpool, but unfortunately you have to earn your right to get to the latter stage, the semi-final and the final of the Champions League. I think they're up against Atletico next week. I think it's vital they get that strongest 11 on the pitch. If they get the strongest 11 on the pitch, I really give them the edge over Atletico. If not, and they're missing players maybe in those key areas, Henderson in particular, I'm a little bit fearful of what's coming down the road.
How good is this kid, Billy Gilmour, in your opinion?
Oh, wow, what a breath of fresh air, Owen. Absolutely love watching him play. Talking about Liverpool, that kind of midfield position, like maybe slight weakness when Henderson's not on the pitch. For me, it's the biggest problem Chelsea have had all season, particularly with Kante not being playing at the holding midfield position. Not having somebody in there who can kind of not only get on and play the ball forward, but actually quite aggressive, can make tackles, track runners, that type of all-action centre midfielder. So to see those kind of attributes kind of embodied in a little, you know, 5'6" little street urchin was absolutely fantastic. I mean, he's only a little dot, but he scurried around the pitch last night. He wanted to get on the ball. He kind of was positive with his passing, and he put his foot in on. He was making tackles. This young fella was amazing, tracking people. Real all-action performance. It was a breath of fresh air. I didn't think he was this good. I'd heard about him. I've seen small little bits of him play. This is the first time I've seen him live from the start. Absolutely blown me away, someone so young. And it's exactly, not only that, for him personally, great night for him personally, but it's actually exactly what Chelsea need, that all-action type of player in central midfield, because they haven't got it with Kovacic and Jorginho. They're weak in there as well, players who can't defend, can't tackle, can't track runners. It was a breath of fresh air watching this kid this morning. Lampard spoke about he deserved his opportunity. It wasn't just a case of giving the young fella a game. He'd earned it. He certainly earned another place in the starting lineup for the weekend for me with that performance. It was amazing.
Yeah, he was absolutely sensational. Just a quick word in Ireland before you wrap up. Kenny, obviously, Nations League draw made yesterday. We'll wait till later in the year to get your full-blown preview on all our opponents. And that the big line coming from yesterday was that Seamus Coleman is definitely going to miss the Slovakia game. It's a pretty big blow. As much as Matt Doherty is a fantastic replacement, you don't want to be losing your captain at this moment.
Yeah, it is a blow. A lot of talk between potentially who would have played in that right-back position, Seamus or Matt. But I think most importantly, just to lose Seamus' kind of presence around the dressing room, it'll be a blow. Owen, he's our captain, big personality around the dressing room. You can even see the way he's carried himself at Everton this year. Always hasn't been a first-team regular. But you can see he's still very influential around the squad. Shows the right type of attitude, very professional. So, yeah, it'd be a little bit of a blow even not to have him around the squad. I just wonder whether he'll travel anyway. That might be the case. He may come over and be part of it. I hope that's the case. I'm sure that would help the lads. But you're right, in Matt Doherty, we have a player who's playing and has been probably for some time at the height of his game. Some of his like stats in terms of assists and goals now for a full back, albeit a win back Owen, are off the radar, and he could be a big asset for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the game against Slovakia, you know, away from home in terms of maybe slight counter attack breaking from deep, he's as good as anybody that was raiding runs down the right hand side. So if he does play in that right wing back position, which is looking likely, it's going to be a massive asset to the team, Jordan, that game. He plays with such confidence, he won't be overawed by it. And his performances of late in an Ireland jersey suggests he's feeling very comfortable now in an Ireland jersey. So if that's the case, I'm looking forward to seeing him play. He could potentially be our match winner, even from that kind of right wing back position.
Absolutely. In terms of match winners then, like we've been speaking about strikers for quite some time now, Mick McCarthy says Troy Parrott's not going to get his chance. I think that's fair enough, to be quite honest with you, Kenny. But David McGoldrick scoring his first goal of the season last night, that could prove to be one of the key threads of form going into later on this month.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it does help in terms of players' mindset, own confidence levels going in. I think David's a big fan of Mick's a big fan of him. I think probably regardless of that goal you're speaking about, maybe a couple of goals under his belt, probably wouldn't have affected Mick's decision making, because I think he probably would have started David. He had if fit. I think he's had a reasonably good qualifying campaign. So I think he would have started regardless. But you're right, Owen, in terms of forwards in particular, always good to have forwards bouncing into the squad in confidence, scoring goals. Shane Long, if he's included, I'm sure he will. Rich Vane of form as well at Southampton's been playing very well. And he's got some good options high up the pitch. It'll be very interesting to see which way he jumps in terms of his selection in those kind of central and wide areas of the pitch. James McCarthy hopefully as well will be available. So that's all we can hope for, Kev. We have everybody fit and available for the game in Slovakia. And I'll be reasonably confident. I just think it's the type of game we can go there and show that kind of defensive resilience and solidity that previously, historically, we have done. And to a certain extent, maybe hit teams on the counter-attack, which I think we're capable of doing. So some very young players available to make inexperienced players or young lads with some great talent as well banging on the door. So I think actually the future augurs very well for us going forward in the short to medium term. But I'd love to see those younger players in particular get the stage to play their football at European Championships in the summer. So hopefully Mick can do the trick for us over the next couple of weeks. But I'd be reasonably confident if we can get those get the majority of that squad fit and available.
Good stuff. Kenny Cunningham, thanks, Billy, for taking the call.
Cheers, Al.
Kenny Cunningham there on the line, reviewing last night's loss for Liverpool at Stamford Bridge, 2-0 the final score in the FA Cup. It is coming up to 8:08 on this Wednesday morning. Plenty coming up over the next hour on OTB AM. Brian Howard, Dana Finn in studio, Irish striker Rhianna Jarrett, and Phil Egan is up next with our top five stories of the morning.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Greece is nasty, a bit mean, to be honest. So we have Spanish referees, so we truly hope that they can cope with that, because away we had some troubles with, to be honest, that it went a bit too far and nobody was stopping them. They have a very few very good footballers, but we have more quality in our team. We have better teamwork in the sense of variety in our play. But they fight to the end. They fight to the 95th minute if necessary, and they keep going and going and going, especially when they see that they can get something. So it will be a very difficult game. It will not be easy, but I am confident that we have more qualities, and with the support of the crowd, it will lift us so to such a height that I'm very confident that we can have a good result in the Telex Stadium.
And what is the advice to the players if Greece are that little bit nasty and the referees aren't quite controlling it? I presume at a certain stage in football you have to fight fire with fire.
No, we will fight fire with a smile. That's what we have agreed with each other. We will fight them with a smile. So we just turn around and we smile.
Right, Vera Powell there in conversation with Joe last night ahead of Ireland's big European qualifier against Greece tomorrow night in Tala. Top five stories this morning. Liverpool lose, of course, going down 2-0 to Chelsea last night. The Nations League. We'll get into Ireland's group in just a moment. Jose Mourinho's been talking again about Troy Parrott, saying basically the same things again about Troy Parrott. Steve Bruce, an interesting press conference exchange after Newcastle's win last night in the FA Cup. And then Brian Howard, he's been speaking to me over the last 24 hours. We'll start with Liverpool. Phil Egan is with us in studio. On a scale of 1 to 10, how big of a wobble is this?
I think...
10 being crisis.
No, let's put it down around 4 or 5. Let's put a bit of context in it. That knocked out of the cup last night, a competition Jurgen Klopp has never really prioritised. This is the furthest they've ever got under him. Mm-hmm. I think the team they picked the day they beat Everton, a lot of people were surprised, and then obviously they got the result, a game that Everton probably felt they should have won, certainly in the first half. They come through the tie against Shrewsbury. So I didn't expect Liverpool to win. Now, saying that, when I saw the team and I saw Mane and Van Dijk in, I thought, yeah, Liverpool have a much better chance and they could actually win this, because Chelsea have their moments, but one thing they don't seem to be good at is that team at the moment lacks a bit of character. But when they got the goal up, then they were comfortable. We saw the graphic on the TV that they've only lost once this season when they've scored the first goal, and that was away at Man City. So also, you realise that when Alisson's not in goal, Adrian, he's a bit of a cult hero among Liverpool fans, but he's just not that good. He's not in the same calibre as Alisson. Obviously, there's a reason Liverpool splashed the cash on a goalkeeper, because they've struggled in that position for a number of years. So you just have to look at the first goal. It was poor. Fabinho is playing like he's got two cement blocks on his feet at the moment. He just looks so leggy. And you think back to last season when Liverpool took time out to go on a warm weather training break in Dubai. They came back and they drew a couple of games. They drew with Leicester. They drew at West Ham. Games that they went ahead in, but they couldn't hold the lead.
When was that? So this was it around the same time?
It was a little bit beforehand, because this is before they drew those games against Manchester United and Everton, which ultimately then handed the initiative back to Manchester City, and they didn't falter on the way in. Liverpool are in that position of there was no way they were going to keep winning. But the beauty of it is they've got all those wins under the belt that they've buried City. City had a lot of games this season where they could have won, but the pressure of knowing that they had to win because Liverpool had the foot down and City couldn't get over the line. So Liverpool have given themselves such a cushion. They say, we know they have to win four more games. I don't even think they're going to have to win four. Now, they'll win more than four, but even this weekend they have Bournemouth, which is probably the nicest game they could have got, one of the nicest games, home to Bournemouth, a team that they can play a low block if they want, but they're just not as good at doing that as, say, the likes of Atletico Madrid or Watford. They'll cause Liverpool a few moments of panic, I'm sure, but it's a game that Liverpool will win. Then they're down to maybe needing three wins. See how the Manchester Derby goes this weekend as well. They mightn't even need the three after the Bournemouth game. And it all sets it up then for next Wednesday against Atletico.
I don't think anybody's concerned about the Premier League
one bit. No, absolutely not.
Like, they can...
And even, I can understand people thinking if Liverpool lose a few more games between now and the end of the season in the league, which I think they will. They've got some tricky games that it could be a bit anticlimactic. But Liverpool, at the start of the season, the aim was to win the Premier League. They're going to win the Premier League. Remember last season, people were telling them to get knocked out of all these competitions, to focus on the Premier League. And they went and they won the Champions League, which was the backup to not winning the Premier League.
And let us also not forget that if you go back to October last year, we are saying to ourselves, why are they even playing their full-strength team in the Champions League? Okay, maybe it wasn't that strong, but at least we were saying, you know, they've got a good start in the Premier League. First 2 months have gone pretty well for Liverpool. Still unbeaten. This is a real opportunity for them to right the wrongs of last season. So forget about the Champions League. Go out and focus on this, and you might pip Manchester City by 2 or 3 points come May. So, like, we've got to realise how the context has changed entirely. And I think we just need to check ourselves when we are talking about this Liverpool team. I think in the context of where we were during the winter break, I think it will be a little bit underwhelming if they go out to Atletico next week. But in the context of last October, it is not underwhelming whatsoever, because Liverpool are going on to win the Premier League.
Yeah.
This thing that has been the thorn in their side for three decades.
Exactly. And I wonder as well, with the timeout, okay, they didn't obviously have a win, they didn't have a training break, they had a winter break, and it just looks like the players have something that Jurgen Klopp often talks about is the rhythm, and they don't have a rhythm at the moment. And what's interesting as well is opposition teams are now starting, I don't know how it's taken them so long, but they're starting to realise, just close down the two fullbacks. They're two most creative players. Now it's up for Liverpool to, if their fullbacks are being thwarted, then you got to go and create somewhere else. So it's up to Liverpool and it's up to Jurgen Klopp to find a way of doing that. Roberto Firmino would be the ideal situation, or the ideal scenario for him, is to start creating more.
Does he then have to drop a bit deeper?
He could do, and maybe a change of formation. And I think what will be interesting to see, what kind of midfield he goes with. James Milner came on last night. You'd imagine he starts at the weekend. Wijnaldum was left out, he starts. What does he do? Does he put Fabinho back in and think you need more game time because you don't look sharp? Not only did he look leggy, but he gave the ball away for the first goal. And he gave the ball away a few times and committed a few fouls. He wasn't good against Watford either. And this takes time. This is why when Lovren came in against Watford, he looked like a player who hadn't played in a few weeks, which he hadn't. So this isn't necessarily a bad thing. Get the minor blip out of the way. If Liverpool go and beat Atletico, things will look so much rosier. They'll, as I said, I fancy them to beat Bournemouth. Then they're in a position where they're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and all of a sudden people are talking to them about being favourites to win the competition again. But it just showed that as good as they are, some of the backup players just aren't what is required. And again, this isn't a bad thing, because this might say to Jurgen Klopp that you didn't really buy any players last summer. You're going to have to invest a bit in your squad this summer. You're going to, maybe it's a lot of talk about Timo Werner. Maybe it's time you go and sign someone like Timo Werner, and you can tweak formations. You can have Firmino and Werner in a team. You can have Salah and Mane. Also, what was notable last night as well, because you don't have the front three playing, the pressing isn't as precise. And
good point, yeah.
Chelsea were given so much space. Like the Ross Barkley goal epitomised just how off at Liverpool were last night.
They press as a unit as well. It's not just their individual talents.
And if you press as an individual, then the opposition will just pass the ball around you. Whereas what happened was,
like, Minamino was not up to the pressing game yet.
Not yet.
Not a chance.
No, and actually, I thought in the first half he looked sharper in terms of with the ball. Whereas the last few games he's played, his touch has been a bit off, which, you know, isn't something you'd associate him, because technically he's a very good player. But yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned. But I think Bournemouth's a nice game. They win that and it sets it all up for next Wednesday. And I just have a feeling, and I felt that after the first leg as well, I think Liverpool will turn it around against Atletico.
Voice of reason, Phil Egan strikes again. We will move on to Nations League. Phil, just before we let you go, it's the second of our top five stories this morning. Wales, Finland, Bulgaria. Will we get relegated again but not get relegated?
Who knows? But it's an ideal scenario for Stephen Kenny, because Mick McCarthy would have loved to have had a Nations League to try things out before the qualifying campaign. But unfortunately for Mick, his first game was a qualifier. Whereas this gives Stephen Kenny a chance to bed in some new players and tweak things with some of the senior players, because he's going to have to basically get them to buy into the way he wants to play. And I'm sure they will. But you think of, say, Stephen Kenny was in charge of the Slovakia game. There isn't much more he could do with this group of players than Mick is going to do in a couple of weeks. So the Nations League gives Stephen Kenny plenty of time to work on how he wants to play and bet a few of these talented under 21 players in. The only concern I have for some of these talented young players is, are they getting enough game time with their clubs? And that's always been my concern. You watch them and you think, how good are these players, but how much game time will they get?
A word of warning about Seamus Coleman from John Fallon's piece in Amsterdam yesterday. It says, Matt Doherty of Wolves is favoured to deputise for the semi-final playoff against Slovakia and Bratislava on March 26th, and the final 5 days later against Northern Ireland or Bosnia should Ireland progress. But McCarthy also spoke in glowing terms of Cyrus Christie after watching him in action for Fulham last Saturday. Yeah. Is there a chance that Mick McCarthy trolls us all and plays Cyrus Christie ahead of Matt Doherty at right back for the Republic of Ireland.
As long as he doesn't play him in midfield. But there is something there with Mick McCarthy and Matt Doherty where I think back to the Denmark game and Matt Doherty scored, but Mick McCarthy was all about how Matt Doherty was at fault for the goal. Mm. And he mentioned it in his press conference, he mentioned in his TV interviews how I should really go in and tell Matt what a great goal he scored rather than all I've said to him so far is you were at fault for the goal, for Braithwaite, Barcelona's Martin Braithwaite's goal.
Little did we know.
No, little did I know watching that. We were watching a future Barcelona star. But yeah, Matt Doherty plays a different system with Wolves, and obviously if you're playing a flat back four, Mick might be a little bit more concerned about his defensive game. But if he picks Cyrus Christie ahead of Matt Doherty, then he will be absolutely slaughtered if
we don't progress.
We don't progress.
Yeah, it's very true. Phil, thanks for popping in. We'll chat to you again soon. It is 20 past 8 on this Wednesday morning. Time to turn to Parnell Park, because yesterday morning, Dublin GEA announced Connecticut Sports as their official sports nutrition partner. And Raheny and Dublin footballer Brian Howard was there, and we caught up with him for a chat.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Delighted to be joined now by Dublin footballer Brian Howard. How are you, Brian?
I'm all good, thank you.
So we're here at the start of March. What are you doing at the moment in terms of getting by as a Dublin footballer? Are you still kind of feeling the end of pre-season? Are you still trying to find your way into full fitness, or what are you at the moment?
Yeah, trying to find my way back into good shape. And I know we haven't been back that long, so there's still a long way to go physically for me. So hopefully I'm going the right direction.
It's a good complaint to have that in March you're still finding your way into full fitness, because you've got to enjoy that off-season, don't you? What did you get up to celebrate the 5 in a row?
There's a few special occasions, but no, it's just time to have a bit of time off, spend time with your family and friends and that you might have seen for a long time throughout the season. But no, you have a bit of time to enjoy yourselves and go off on holidays and stuff like that. So it was well needed. But we had to come back fairly fast after Christmas and get back into it.
Were those sessions the classic horrible pre-season sessions, or were you doing a bit on the side before that just to lessen the blow a small bit?
Yeah, well, I can speak personally and probably for most other players that when you're off, you're not really off. You're always thinking that you need to come back in decent shape. So you're trying to do, whether that's a few running sessions or gym sessions, you need to be ticking along. And I know when you're not playing, players want to be playing. And when you are playing, you don't want to be doing all the running and stuff like that. But yeah, when you're not playing, you have to do stuff to make sure you're in decent shape.
It's interesting, actually, when you mentioned strength and conditioning there, and I guess whatever gym sessions or whatever it may be in the preseason, how that's actually changed in the last even 3 or 4 years. That I guess about, if you go 5 to 10 years ago, I think bigger was better for GEA. Whereas now it seems that people are slimming down a small bit, that speed used to be sacrificed a small bit. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, to be honest. Don't know what the answer is. But
for you personally?
For me personally, there's different positions. You need your fast lads, you need your strong lads, you need a lot of versatility in the team. But for me, I sort of just have gone with the flow, sort of. Tried to get a bit bigger physically, and then obviously not neglecting the speed or other aspects of the game. So you try to get a nice balance of a bit of everything.
When you step into intercounty football, do you look around at your opposition players and your teammates and say, right, okay, I need to put on a bit more bulk? And then, because it never seemed for you that was ever an issue. With some young players who come in, you kind of say to yourself, right, a couple of years and they'll have their man strength. For you, it seemed like you had that before coming in with Dublin?
Yeah, so from under-21s, I probably wasn't that big. I might have maybe had broad build or something, but when you go into something like a Dublin setup or a senior intercounty, whatever team it is, that there is that bit of onus on you to make sure that you are physically right, so that if that's put on a few kg or get stronger in the gym or get quicker or faster, whatever it may be, but obviously you're going to have to alter some things when you make that step up from juvenile to under-21s and up into senior.
We were chatting to you about 12 months ago and I asked you what your best position was. You hadn't pinned down a position then at that point, which in a very positive way, I think that was. Have you pinned down a position yet at this point as to which one your favourite position is?
No. I know I just love playing. That's the main thing for me, whether that's anywhere on the pitch. I just want to be out there kicking the ball around. So if that's corner forward or corner back, it doesn't make any difference to me really. But I know where the game's going now, you have to be adaptable and fluid regardless of what position you are, that things change, black card coming in, stuff like that you have to be adaptable.
There's been a lot of talk about who is the long-term partner of Brian Fenton in Dublin's midfield. Is that something that interests you?
Yeah, having the opportunity to play alongside Brian, in the past I have got the opportunity to, and it is an honour. But now there's still some players to come back now that potentially could fill that role. But that's not up to us to decide. It's up to the management, and hopefully they'll put the best player in that position.
What is it like partnering Fenton in midfield? What's it like? What's he saying to you during the game, and what's the partnership like?
Yeah, there's always a few sly digs, but it doesn't feel like you're playing really. It just looks like you're playing down St. Anne's Park alongside him. That there is that bit of chemistry is in, that's not just all serious. There is that bit of crack, and he's been a huge influence for me growing up. Coming into the team, he helped me a lot. So I have a lot of respect for him, and I owe him a lot. But when we're on the pitch, yeah, we have a job to do, but is that fun aspect is certainly there.
Yeah, that seems to be something that the Dublin team have got off to a tee at this moment, that when on the pitch there's an edge, there's an aggression which every top team needs to have, but then there's also kind of an appreciation for where you're at as a team and a smile on your face at certain moments, enjoying the off-season as we've already spoken about.
Yeah, all of us in the dressing room, we're privileged to get the opportunity to represent Dublin and put on the jersey, and it's not something that happens every day. So any time you do get the opportunity, you want to treasure it, and you don't want to let anyone down. So when we go out onto the pitch, that's our first priority, is to make sure that we're doing best for obviously the county in general. So the fun aspect's certainly there, but we do have other underlying goals and stuff we want to achieve as well.
What's Brian Fenton's biggest weakness?
Terrible sense of style. I don't know, like the chap, he's sort of a role model for a lot of people in terms of on the pitch. People are trying to see where his weaknesses are, but I haven't found him yet on the pitch. I certainly have a few weaknesses off the pitch. But But now on the pitch, he's a brilliant player, and he's one of the top players around. But everybody has their weaknesses. Some have stronger A games than B games. So I can't really answer that. I don't really know, because I don't pay too much attention to him.
Right. So let's talk about this style issue off the pitch. How bad is it, and what can you do to address this problem?
I might give him a few tips. I try not to, but now he wouldn't be the most stylish player. So hopefully a few words of wisdom won't go astray from.
And is there a particular garment we're talking about here that he tends to look back on?
No, just his overall style wouldn't be the best. So whether that's gym gear or suits, like, he wouldn't really scrub up too well. But he'd kill me for saying that. But I know he does have a few nice outfits now, I must say.
There does seem to be a couple of fashionistas in the team, like Michael Darmacauley. Is Mac Menaman into his fashion as well?
Yeah, everybody has their own different styles and let everyone off, but some are more into their style than other. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Well, did I see, was it last year, the year before, after the Leinster final, you were all given basically a uniform to go out into the coppers for the night? Kind of like, did you see the Manchester City thing last week when they were on?
Yeah.
It actually reminded me of the Dubs, I think it was the 2018 Leinster final. So that's probably better for someone like Brian to actually have the sort of uniform for going out.
Yeah, somebody with a bit of taste can actually tell them what to wear.
I was chatting to you before you went on air there, and you're looking fresh for a man who played in that game in Omagh at the weekend. What was that like? What was the atmosphere like and the intensity of the game?
Given the circumstances, it was the atmosphere was actually quite good, considering there probably wasn't that many people there with the weather. But on the pitch, it was a great game. Both first and second half, it was a clean competitive game, and unfortunately we came out the wrong end of it. But no, it was a great game, enjoyable game, even though people probably wouldn't say that because of the conditions. But no, it was a good challenge for us to test ourselves, and Tyrone as well. They say the exact same thing, test different aspects of your game, your basic handling, your basic foot pass and kick pass, and so stuff like that was extremely tested, and you could really get a reflection of where you are at individually and collectively as a team on the basics.
Did you know that the game was going ahead all day? Because it seemed there was a lot of confusion even during the afternoon about whether or not this thing would go ahead.
Yeah, we knew it was going ahead, and we didn't have any doubts in our head. Right. Obviously, going up on the bus when you're seeing the weather, obviously you're going to have question marks, but no, we knew very early on that it was going ahead, and then we were in the right mindset going into the game that wasn't going to be a pleasant game, but you had to obviously try to dig out a win from somewhere.
Yeah, it's never a pleasant game when you're up against Tyrone as well. They tend to make it very hard for the opposition. Like, we obviously saw what happened at halftime inside in the tunnel. Do you know what sparked that or what happened down there?
No. So if you're watching the game, I actually sprinted off first. So I was in sitting down in the dressing room. So we didn't actually see what happened. And when the lads came in, we obviously had another half. So it was straight back into the focus zone. And
so you were just sitting there in the dressing room, just listening to the ruckus outside.
There was a few of us had already gone in. Then obviously when you hear a bit of commotion going on outside, you went out and had a look, but at that stage whatever happened I don't actually know was all finished, so I just went back in, then we had to focus on the second half.
Yeah, it's a strange one because they often have rules that like one team goes off the pitch first and then the other team has to wait to go off, especially in a ground like Healy Park when it's kind of closed and confined. Were Dublin the designated team to run off first on the night?
No, and I haven't been aware of any rules of what team goes off first, but no, and nothing like that. I know in my experience of playing, nothing like that has happened. So it's very rare thing, and it was just whatever happened. It was just just two teams that two very competitive teams mm-hmm. that have a bit of history, obviously in the final in 18, and competitive games opened all year, and we've seen to always be playing them in Super 8s and stuff like that. But no, it's just two competitive teams that we both love. Speaking from Dublin's perspective, we love playing Tyrone because they bring a different challenge both physically and mentally, that you have to be in the right headspace.
Was there much needle during the game? Was there like any verbal jibes or anything like that?
No, and it was a clean game. A few yellow cards, but that was probably more down to sloppy tackling with the conditions. But no, there was no off the ball stuff, and it was a clean game from both teams.
Yeah, absolutely. The Dean Rock effort is something that's gone viral, I think it's fair to say, going for a point and then it goes out over the sideline. Like, were you chatting to him after the game? Was there any of your kick pass or anything that you're like, oh, I can't do anything about this?
Yeah, there was a few kick passes that were just well off, and he would have been off on any day, even in the sunshine and summer. But now Dean, I remember watching that from behind him, that any other day it would have been over the black spot, but when it goes out for a sideline, then you sort of have to be like, oh, was it a bad effort? But now the conditions, the wind completely took it, but now we can't make any excuses for that because it was the same for both teams, so we had to adapt, but they just adapted better.
Yeah, like, it's interesting as well when we think about everything that happened at halftime, and we talk about these rivalries that perhaps spill over a little bit from time to time. We were kind of chatting about it on the show the other day. Your own clubmate, Kieran Whelan, had like obviously a cup of tea thrown at him a few years back against Meath. So, some crazy things happen when you're in the heat of battle in this rivalry. Was that as heated a situation as you've ever seen? Granted, you only peeked your head out the door, but have you ever been involved in any situations like that?
No, because all the games I've been involved have been clean games, and there's nothing that is over the top, nothing too serious. But no, I think from what I've heard, it was just more just like pushing and a bit of shoving. But obviously it doesn't look great for either team or the sport in general. So, but it is a rare event. So no, that's all I can say about that, because I don't actually, it's no point me saying, because I actually wasn't there.
How is Desi Farrell getting on?
Yeah, it's brilliant having him in this year. I got the opportunity to play under him, and now a lot of the other lads, so he's not a new face or a stranger to any of us. So and his backroom team, so having him there with his credentials in the past, having been so successful as a player and as a manager, it's brilliant to have his experience in the dressing room.
How close was your relationship before he became senior manager?
Yeah, it was good. I know when I went in after he was a big influence for me going into the senior team, because he was the one that got me confident, and when I was meeting him one-to-one, he was giving me what I needed to hear to push me on, and thankfully that year we won the All-Ireland, so he was doing everything right, and then he pushed me on to go in the right direction into senior, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, those one-to-one conversations that Desi has been famed for doing down through the years, especially with underage players, sound so interesting. For you, what personally did he say to you that gave you that element of confidence that you speak about there?
I couldn't put my finger on one thing, but to hear the stuff that you're good at and hearing from a different person is huge, and that's in sports and off sports, that everybody's good at in their own way in different things, and hearing someone else notice that and telling you that is huge. So that just gave me, when he sat me down, gave me that bit of confidence, and hearing it from someone else really pushed me on, and I might have been low in confidence and not performing well, and I had the chat, and then the next few games it really helped me, and I was confident going forward.
It's amazing, isn't it, because we can sometimes get so bogged down in the negatives, and you're not doing that right, and to get better we need to focus on those negatives, where actually sometimes the improvement may come from saying you're really good at high fielding or whatever it may be, and all of a sudden you have a bit more confidence to leap and make that next catch and show your high fielding. Like, I think the positivity and pushing home the positive attributes is something that helps every young player.
Yeah, because everybody has their strong points and obviously their weaker points. So I know for me, I do get bogged down on the weaker points because they're the ones that you need to improve on. But it's just as important to develop the stronger skills of your game, because they're the things that have got you there in the first place. And then if you can develop the stronger with the weaker, that's going to be a huge benefit for you going forward.
Well, listen, Brian, it's been a pleasure chatting to you. Best of luck for the rest of the league. Hopefully you won't have to play in too many conditions like Healy Park on Saturday.
Perfect. Thanks, William.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Yeah, 8:36 on this Wednesday morning. You're watching or listening to OTB AM. That full piece with Brian Howard, available now on youtube.com/offtheball. Make sure to check out GA on Off The Ball if you're looking for the podcast. Delighted to say that 20 by 20 ambassador Dana Finn is with us in studio. How are you, Dana?
Not too bad now.
Mayo footballer, I should say. Marie basketballer, Ireland under 20 basketballer as well. Also, I should say welcome home, first of all. You were in Erasmus in Valencia since, what was it, September?
Yeah, September. So I'm just actually home the end of January there. I had exams and then I came home, so I'm back in playing with Mary and Mayo when I can, so yeah.
For somebody who's been involved with Gaelic games for most of your entire life, how does life in Valencia go? How do you adjust to life over there where there is no GAA, I presume?
Yeah, different, like definitely really different. I was playing with a club, Valencia Basket, and then there was actually a GAA club. I'm actually not sure the name. I didn't have time to play with them. They trained during the week and there was a load of the Irish out there playing. But yeah, definitely different. Like the basketball, they kind of had a different style of playing, which was really good to experience. But I kind of wish I did a bit of football out there just as a fun, but they trained the same night as me, so it was a bit of a clash.
How do you mean that there's a different style in basketball?
I suppose like the team I was playing with was more guard orientated. Like we normally have, say, two big, like four bigs at home, always using them, but it was more... We still play guard to guard like all the time, but more handoffs. I suppose it was more guard orientated, and the style of coaching. I suppose it's good to experience different coaches. I've had so many coaches down the years, and then obviously playing through Spanish was difficult enough, but good as well. Like definitely helped my Spanish.
When you're saying you're playing four bigs in basketball, is that for Marie? Is that for Ireland under 20s, or is it everyone?
Yeah, everyone really. I know as a guard or a point guard, you always like to work with a big. Their screening you to get to the basket, or like they're always good to work with. So yeah, mainly on every team you have four bigs and the rest are guards. Yeah.
So that's the Irish style of play right now.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, right. There's no necessarily style, but each team is different, obviously. But it's just good to different. I was experiencing like a different style of basketball, I suppose. Yeah.
So. I was watching the Houston Rockets at the weekend. And they're the exact opposite of that. They're playing with five small guys, maybe four small, one big guy on the court.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, yeah.
So then you're again, the anti-Houston Rockets.
Yeah, person. Yeah. I suppose it depends on what team you have as well. Like they're unreal. They can work with that. Like
sure.
But then again, I suppose at the big stage, at internationally, like we definitely need a big like inside.
Before we get into Mayo, we may as well talk about this Irish basketball team, because it's an unbelievably exciting time for your under-20s team. For anybody who doesn't know, won bronze in the European Championships last year, but it means promotion to the under-20 Championships this year into the A competition. So talk to us about that and that evolution of this team.
So I suppose at under-18 age, we played in the B European Championships in Dublin, and we got silver, so we got promoted. So this is our second time getting promoted. So we won a game, we bet Sweden then in A, that was in Italy.
Okay.
And that was massive, we bet Sweden by a point. It was the only game we won, but like such an achievement for playing in A for the first time. And then last year then, the team from Dublin came back again together, and we went to Kosovo, and we were playing in... We got relegated then, and we were playing the B Championship again. So we won bronze, and now we're up again. So A was a huge experience. Like, the level of basketball is definitely a big step up. But I'm excited to get going again this summer and see what it takes us.
Who are the continental leaders at the moment?
In A? Oh, Belgium, Spain, Belgium, Spain... Lithuania, a lot of those teams will be high up there.
So you would have been experiencing some of the A-level basketball in Spain?
Like there was a professional team in my club and all that, and they're playing really high levels, like Spain are one of the best. So we'll see. It's definitely a big challenge, but we'll see how it goes.
It's fantastic, because it's something that we've been speaking about in the last couple of weeks when we were talking about funding for our sporting organisations and how, unfortunately, Basketball Ireland, during their tough times, had to cut funding for national teams. But it seems that there's a bit of a golden generation developing here at the moment.
Yeah, so I suppose I've been playing since I was under 8 to under 16s. And from a personal point of view, like my parents, say, have funded since then. It's definitely on the rise, especially with the 2020 campaign and women in sport. They're definitely promoting and giving more coverage to women. So I hope we eventually get the funding we need, because some people are unfortunate. They could be the best player in the country and just can't afford to play for their country. So that's just a bit of one of the biggest downfalls. But hopefully, there was a lot of coverage about it lately, but... Hopefully we get the funding we need eventually.
So it's still self-funded at this level, right?
Yeah, at the moment it is, yeah. So we'll fund this summer. I'd say if next year, maybe things will be different, but for this summer, yeah.
And it's Hungary this summer?
Hungary, yeah. And then we're going to France in June. Hopefully we have a tournament.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's another 20s tournament as well.
Yeah.
All right, very good. Yeah. In terms of your club basketball then, it was a disappointing weekend last week.
Yeah.
So what happens here for people who haven't been following it? It was Mary were in with a shout of winning the Super League, and then it was basically a take-all encounter against DCU Mercy last Sunday.
So basically we played DCU during the year before I came home, and we bet them by a point at home, and we lost them in the first round of the cup. We had them in the first round of the cup and we lost to them. So then this time round, basically we beat Colester last week in extra time, and we DCU this weekend, or last weekend. And DCU haven't lost a game. Well, they lost to us. That was the only game they lost. So it was a top-of-the-table clash. And if we bet DCU, we would have been playing... So they were there to play Glanmire this Sunday. So if they lost to Glanmire, then we would have pushed up to number one the table. But we lost to DCU. So we're still second place, which is huge for us because it's our first year in Super League. Mm. But... if Glanmire beat them, Glanmire passed us out. Mm. So I suppose we'll see how it goes, but we're definitely so happy with our achievement this season.
It's interesting looking across the other side of the court. Last Sunday, I'd imagine, you see someone like Mark Ingle coaching DCU Mercy, and the link that he has been between basketball and GAA, for example, because Jim Gavin brought him in to coach basketball skills to his Dublin team over the last few years. Is that something that you've experienced with Mayo yet, that basketball coaching has started to be brought in to football?
Not yet. No, we actually haven't had anyone on board yet. I know the Mayo seniors have, I think it's Terry Kennedy on board just this year. So, and maybe before that they've been doing sessions every month, but I'm not sure. But there's definitely a link, and it would be good to get a session a month in with a coach like Mark Ingalls is with the Dublin seniors, I think. Brilliant coach, yeah. So definitely links between it, like your spacing on the court, your reaction times, like your reaction times in the game. in football and basketball are really linked. Like, I know Kieran Donaghy talked about, I was watching the Sunday game a while back, and he talked about there was a clip of Dublin, and the ball was kicked into the half forwards, and there was a loop, and then he went back door, and that's such a play in basketball where you go back door and you get an easy layup. But yeah, they're definitely becoming way more linked, and a lot of people are becoming to see the benefits of it.
Yeah, that's the classic Paul Mannion in the corner move.
Yeah,
where
Callum
and the
left,
kind of loops around him.
Yeah, yeah. So I remember watching that, and I was like, "That's so true." Yeah, very linked.
Do you see much of that within other teams, or Dublin kind of the real market leader at the moment?
Yeah, I think when I seen that, that was probably the first time I kind of had noticed it. When Kieran pointed it out, but yeah, I think Dublin are a step ahead, but definitely other teams are like becoming to do. I just haven't spotted, I suppose, yet.
In terms of Marie, then, you say that obviously it's your first year in the Super League. How is basketball going in the West? Because I know, like, obviously both of your parents would have played for Mayo, for example. I'm not sure that the stories come down as well from the golden era of basketball in Ballina as well,
yeah,
for example.
Yeah. So Liam McHale has actually got inducted into the Hall of Fame there last year. So yeah, definitely in the West now, I'm not sure, I think Ballina have like a men's team, but I actually don't, and he could be, his brother is coaching that, I think. But yeah, like there's a lot of underage in Ketchmaw in my town, a lot of underage. We wouldn't have an under 18 team. It would be under 14, under 12, under 16 kind of thing. But yeah, I know, hoping that like there is something big there in the next few years with all the promotion about sport and women in sport, especially like young girls are starting to come to our games in Mary from Ketchmaw. And yeah, no, it's definitely good to see. So hopefully it's on the rise.
Yeah, on that very point, I should say that Off the Ball, our official media partner to 20 by 20. And this week we're asking you to show your stripes and make a pledge to either participate or play more, to attend more women's sports events, or to promote, discuss, like, share and follow more female athletes. And basketball is one of these things that seems to be ticking all those three boxes at the moment in terms of participation. This is not just young boys playing this game. Like, it's a huge participation sport for both genders at the moment. And this is why it is so important that the resurgence around the country in basketball is happening right now.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose there's definitely been way more attendance at women's games and men's games as well. But it's definitely on the rise. And I hope that people kind of like start coming to games, start attending and encouraging young players to play like in their towns. And clubs. So, 20 by 20 is a brilliant campaign just to create more awareness about women in sport. And not that men, like, there is so much awareness about the men as well, but I think there needs to be a bit more about women, and there's definitely, from this campaign, it's definitely benefiting. So
I just want to finish up on Mayo football then. What's your best position? Because it seems that you played midfield, you played centre-back, and you played full-back, I think, only a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so I've actually been busy, like really busy with basketball lately, so I haven't been, like, I've been to some games and finding it hard to get to train during the week, but yeah, so I was midfield most of the year last year. Midfield probably would be my preferred position, but then against Galway in the quarterfinal or the semi-final in Dublin,
semi-final.
In Crow Park, I was kind of number six sweeper kind of thing,
right.
So then Peter put me in fullback. Who did we play?
Was it the Cork game, Tipperary game maybe? Or
Was
there
sure
a Waterford fixture as well?
Yeah. I'm not sure who we played, but
it's been a busy few weeks.
Yeah, God. But yeah, so I was in full back. Yeah, I liked it. Different. You're like, you don't have as much freedom, and you always have to be on the ball thinking. But yeah, we'll see. I suppose I'm trying to kind of focus on basketball for the next few weeks just because it's coming towards the end of the season, and then I'll try and get in more. So we play Westmeath on Sunday, so I'm there for that.
Yeah, it must be a completely different thing in terms of your positional awareness when you move back to number three. Just, I guess, with midfield, there's almost so many breaks around kickouts and stuff like that. You kind of can almost go with the flow.
Yeah, yeah. So in full back, I was kind of like, I played a game for Minor two years ago, and I was actually full back. So I kind of had experience in it, but I was kind of throwing the deep end, I suppose. And then, yeah, I definitely have to be more aware. Like in midfield, you're free flow, kind of. You're getting the ball in midfield and you're delivering, whereas you're trying to stop them scoring at the end of the day in full back. So, yeah, we'll see, you know.
I was looking at the dates for this summer. Is there a possibility that there's a clash between the under 20 basketball championships and the All Ireland football championship? If things
there
go
probably
well.
Is. There always is. Yeah. So I think the championship has changed this summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually don't know. I suppose I'll cross those hurdles when I get to them. But so we go on the 5th August, I think it is. So there's probably something around then. There always is. But I suppose we'll see anyway.
And then is it very much a singular focus on Galway at the moment? A bit of revenge for that semi-final last
year? Yeah. So we've Galway in two weeks time. So they're going good. They beat Dublin last week. So hopefully we can get the win there. And a bit of rivalry against them is right, even though I play for a Galway club. But yeah.
Well, listen, Dana, it's been great chatting to you. Thanks a million.
Thanks
for popping
thanks
in.
For having me.
That's 20 by 20 ambassador Dana Finn. Now, Tom Malone is in studio next with the latest sports news. But first, here's Newcastle manager Steve Bruce, who got into a bit of a tetchy interaction with a journalist last night.
I'm not going to answer you, Craig.
No.
You just out to disrail us totally. No. It's total lies. It's nonsense. I'm glad your source is wrong. You're calling me a liar? So what are you calling me?
You calling me a liar?
Well, your report was wrong. Why can't you list it? Well, there you are, then you are. I've had no row with with St Maxim, okay? None.
Did the player
a bust
he,
up?
Did the player think he was fit to start on Saturday?
I didn't ask that. You wrote that I had a bust up. No, you wrote yesterday that you had a bust up. Yes, you did.
I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't. The word bust up wasn't used. I didn't use the word row, I didn't.
Well, we've had a bust up. That was the headline? Okay, then we'll beg to differ.
Steve Bruce there last night speaking to Craig Hope of the Daily Mail, who wrote a story about a fallout between Alan St. Maximan and Steve Bruce, of course, and Steve Bruce having none of it. So a bit of a touchy situation there. Very entertaining stuff.
The video is brilliant as well, where he's like, he literally picks, you know, when it looks like it's almost like a fight going to break out in a bar and someone picks up their drink, like, and kind of looking, you're like, is he going to throw that lock?
It's usually just to quench the fire burning inside.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. But it's well worth checking out the video as well. We start with a crisis on Merseyside.
May as well. Where else?
Absolute crisis, yes. The 22-point Premier League leading world and European champions have lost their last three of the last four games. So Jurgen Klopp's side now out of another competition they probably don't want to be in, the FA Cup, after a 2-0 loss to Chelsea in the fifth round at Stamford Bridge last night. Willian and Ross Barkley scored the goals for the pensioners, but Jurgen Klopp says his players will bounce back.
I don't sit here and think, okay, the way back to the moment where we can score or we don't concede is like 100 miles away. So it's little things, but the little things make the difference, and we have to. The boys are strong. They showed so many times a wonderful reaction, and now we have to show this reaction again.
Of course, you heard from Steve Bruce there. His Newcastle side got the better of Championship leaders West Brom by 3-2 last night to reach the quarterfinals. David McGoldrick, meanwhile, was on the mark for Sheffield United, who are 2-1 extra-time winners at Reading. Tonight, meanwhile, Tottenham manager Jose Mourinho has confirmed that Troy Parrott will be on the bench for that home game against Norwich City. But Mourinho, again, says the teenager needs some time.
He has two appearances in the Premier League, which is something that is not very normal with 18-year-old kids. So I think he's a privileged one. And I think in this moment he understands the privilege he has of being training and being part of the first team every day.
He loves that, doesn't he? The privileged one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything is a something one.
Yeah.
Like, they're definitely dropping hints. And it seems that it's almost like copy and paste every single time he talks about Troy Parrott. Is in, like, he's not ready, he's not ready. Very, very, very. And he says very about a million times. Very young boy. And things like that. So I do wonder what will happen next with their relationship here. It's obviously going to be on the bench tonight. And
yeah. I mean, it was almost like that the appearance off the bench on Sunday was just like, I brought him on, what's your problem? Even though it was like the 92nd minute. Meanwhile, elsewhere, Pep Guardiola, as Manchester City make the trip to Sheffield Wednesday, boss Pep Guardiola says he's fully focused on a domestic cup double.
The league is deserved and it's be done. So the other competitions, we won two this season with the Community Shield against them and last game against Aston Villa. Now we have the Cup and of course the Premier League to finish second as high as possible, as much points as possible, and after two competitions.
while Leicester take on Birmingham City at the King Power Stadium tonight as well. All those games get underway at 7:45 and the draw for the sixth round will take place after tonight's action. The Republic of Ireland's Nations League campaign will begin away to Bulgaria on the 3rd of September. The fixtures for Ireland's League B group were revealed last night, 3 days after that trip to Sofia. Finland will visit the Aviva Stadium. Then in October, Wales come to Dublin, followed by a trip to Finland for Stephen Kenny's side. The group concludes in November with a game in Cardiff and a home tie with Bulgaria. Current boss Mick McCarthy says he's hoping to hand over a successful team to Stephen Kenny.
It's great because I'm putting an advert out for myself that everybody knows I'm going to be free and able to take up another job in July, whatever happens. And hopefully that will be on the back of a European Championship with games in Dublin. If that is the scenario, then I'll be best placed to get a job when one come up, won't I?
Coronavirus update as well. Ireland's Six Nations meeting with France could hinge on a meeting scheduled to take place in Paris today. Earlier this week, competition organisers said all remaining games would go ahead when time allows. Saturday's clash with Ireland and Italy, of course, already postponed. But the French Rugby Federation and representatives of their Department of Sport will discuss their approach to the coronavirus outbreak today. The RFU, meanwhile, have confirmed that Mako Vunipola will be available for Saturday's Six Nations clash with Wales at Twickenham. The Saracens prop had been self excluding on COVID-19 precaution, having returned from Tonga recently. While in Gaelic games, Kerry under-20 manager John Sugars just made one change to his side for tonight's Air Grid and Munster under-20s final. Sean Horan replaces Sean Keane at full forward for the meeting with Cork at Austin Stack Park. Defending champions Cork are unchanged from their semi-final win over Clare. Throw in Interleague there at 7:30. And with less than a week to go until the Cheltenham Festival yesterday, trainer Henry de Bromhead confirmed that his star mare Honeysuckle will run in the Mare's Hurdle on Tuesday rather than the champion hurdle. It's likely she will come up against last year's final flight faller and favourite Benny Dejou. Finally, racing today comes from Clonmel, but of course we'll be focused on the pool, won't we?
Nice segue. I was wondering if you put it into your last one. For anybody who doesn't know, Monday and Wednesday is the day when I go to suffer in a swimming pool and Tom goes to show us all how bad we are at swimming. On Monday, we had Bethany Carson coaching us in the pool. She's a former international swimmer. She's now assistant coach at the National Aquatic Centre. She put us through our paces.
Yeah, good. She good techers. We had good techers after that, I think.
I was going to say my favourite part. Clearly not my favourite part whatsoever. She was like, we're going to do a few drills. Going to take it easily. I'll put you back to the bad guy, Pete, on Wednesday. It's actually ratchet up the distance. So just do 25 metres doing this drill, 25 metres doing that drill, 25 metres doing this drill. And I was like, I'm suffering here. This is not like...
Yeah, she's like, we'll just do 425s. And you're like, that's 100? So yeah, no.
No, once you get into three figures with me, I'm finished. But it's going. I think we're halfway there, Tom.
A little worrying, to be perfectly honest. But look, the progress has been good, I think, in all parts. There's a bit of few shots fired last night in the PM show, actually. Did you hear that?
I heard Tommy Rooney was accused as
big soft,
feigning injury.
Basically soft, they said he was, yeah.
He's asking us if we would stand up for him, but really, it's not going to happen, to be honest with you. We'll see how he does today.
We'll see how he goes today. I mean, you'll see what he learned from Bethany Carson.
Her parting shot on Monday was, we were all able, it's now all above the shoulders.
It's purely mental from here on, which is 100% not true, by the way. It is absolutely not true. Like, our fitness is not nearly good enough. Yeah.
Just to tell you that Off the Ball are doing Swim Ireland Swim for a Mile, and you can sign up too. Visit www.swimforamile.com for information on participating pools and their training information. Sign up for a free account today to access a downloadable training program and book your Swim for a Mile event. Just a quick note to say that Saracens have said that Mako Vunipola is available for selection despite coronavirus fears. So not for England, but yes, he will be available apparently for Saracens at the moment, but not for England. So that's the latest on Mako Vunipola. Right, Ireland and Brighton star Rhianna Jarrett joined Shane Hannan earlier this week to chat about Ireland's crucial qualifier against Greece and Tala tomorrow night, and also her flying start to life at Brighton.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
All right, this Thursday night at Tala Stadium is the Republic of Ireland women's team against Greece in a Euro 2021 qualifier. The next Wednesday, it's away to Montenegro. Two wins and a draw from the group so far in Group I. And I'm joined by one of the Irish squad members, Rhianna Jarrett. Rhianna, you joined Brighton recently, and it's fair to say your debut went quite well last Tuesday in the FA Cup against Crystal Palace. A brace of goals in your debut, that must have been a delightful way to start your career with Brighton.
Yeah, obviously couldn't have asked for a better start, to be honest. Was firstly delighted to to get the call to start the game. It was my first game since the cup final with Wexford Utes in November, so I was really looking forward to it. And obviously, as a striker, you go into every game, you back yourself to score, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. And thankfully, I think it was within the first 15-20 minutes that we went 1-0 up. And for me personally, obviously, it was delighted to get that goal, but I actually don't score too many goals from outside the box. Somehow managed to score one from outside the box for my first goal, so was delighted with that. But in terms of Tuesday, the important thing for us was obviously that we got that win. Crystal Palace are a division below us, but the beauty of the cup is whoever turns up on the day can go and win it. And so we were under, like, we knew that going into the game. We knew that they were going to give us a battle, and the important thing was, yes, that we performed well, but that we managed to win the game, and thankfully we've done that, and we're in the quarter final now, and we've a home draw.
How important is that? I know you made the move, as you said, from Wexford over to Brighton. For players in the women's game like yourself, how important is that, getting that cross channel and playing abroad and getting game time over in the Women's Super League? I mean, is that, in your mind, key to your international ambitions, for example?
Yeah, obviously. For me personally, I wanted to try my arm at that higher level, and actually going into any full-time environment is going to be higher than playing at an amateur level here in Ireland. And thankfully, I got that move. But for me, I knew going over there straight away, especially going over in the middle of the season, that I wasn't going to be guaranteed game time. I knew I was going to have to work hard. And yes, I've played in the cup, but nothing is given when I go back after the international break. There's still a lot of hard work to be done. I still have to prove myself in terms of in training every day, and hopefully soon enough I can start to get a few minutes here in the league and can build from there. But ultimately, as a player, no matter whether you're here in Ireland or you are abroad, the important thing is that you are playing, because you can train all you want, you can run all you want, but the only way to get match fit is by playing games, and the only way to test yourself and is by putting yourself in a game time situation. Obviously, it's not going to happen overnight, but for me, obviously, it is important that I am in an environment where I stand a realistic chance of playing games. Obviously, I have to prove myself first, and as I said, there's still a lot to be done in terms of that, but I do feel that once I am settled and once I start proving myself in training, that hopefully I can start building on game time then as well.
I'd read that you'd been obviously composing video footage of yourself. That's an important way to get yourself out there and promote yourself to clubs in England. And obviously Hope Powell is in charge with Brighton, who's clearly a very recognisable name in the English women's game, having managed the national team over there. But how did that process go about, of putting yourself out there and getting the call from Brighton and from Hope?
So for me, it kind of started last August. We went to LA to play the US women's team on the back of their victory tour after winning the World Cup. And I remember having a conversation with Louise Quinn. For me, obviously, I was back playing 2 years at that point. I was feeling good. I was getting fitter. I was getting stronger. And I was like, now was probably a realistic time to see if I can create any opportunities for me to go and play abroad. So I spoke with Louise, and obviously she had made the transition from playing in the Women's National League to moving abroad. So I was just kind of asking her questions onto like how she went about it. And from there, she actually put me in touch with her agent, so CSU Sports Management. And from there, I was already in the process of putting together a highlight video. So Avenir Sports in Galway, they actually put it together for me. And it was just kind of clips of me playing with both Ireland and with Wexford. And from there, my agents, then they put together kind of a CV, and then they done all the groundwork in terms of talking to clubs and seeing if we could set up some opportunities. And Brighton was one of those opportunities. So from there, they invited me over on trial. I was supposed to go in November once the season finished, but I had a little knock on my knee, so I ended up missing the last Greece game. So we postponed it till early January. So I went on trial then, and thankfully Brighton decided that yes, they'd take a chance on me and sign me kind of mid-season. Obviously the step up from amateur and Women's National League to full-time in the Women's Super League is massive, so it was going to take me a bit of time to kind of get used to, one, going into a full-time environment, but also to the level that they're actually playing at is significantly higher as well. But the fact that they signed me mid-season, knowing that was still good, and obviously I was delighted to get the opportunity, and obviously to play under Hope, as you said, like her experience from a player but also as a manager is second to none, and she's well equipped in terms of the women's game.
On this Irish setup then, I know there's a lot of competition for places, probably more so even than a couple of years ago, but Kyra Caruso, for example, is another call-up for a bit of competition for yourself, I guess, up front. So how healthy is that to have players competing all over the pitch to get into Vera Pauw's starting 11?
I think as a squad, it's needed. Competition for places means that everybody has to prove themselves, and everybody knows that, yes, you can get called into a squad, but that nothing is given. And you know that even when you come into camp, if you're playing well, if you're performing well, and you've seen that from previous selections, that if you're performing well, if you're playing well, then Vera will put her trust in you and put you into that starting 11, and nothing changes this camp. There's competition for places all over the pitch, which is exactly what we need. I think it keeps everybody on their toes, but ultimately it should in turn then also get the best out of everybody, because you need to put your best foot forward if you want to be in contention. And I think for a squad that has aspirations of qualifying for our first major tournament, we need that. A squad is so much more than just 11 players. Even the 23 the 20 plus that are in this time around, there's still players that are missing through injuries and whatnot that can still come back in at different stages. So everyone's looking over their shoulder, but everyone has that same focus. Everyone is gearing towards the same thing ultimately, and that is, on a match day, we want to get 3 points. We want to put our best foot forward, and we want to qualify for the Euro 21, which is in England. And everybody is kind of looking the same way. And naturally, if there is competition for places, as I said, it's going to bring out the best in everybody, which is exactly what we need if we're to qualify.
You mentioned that Euro 2021 in England next year, and as you said, would be the first international tournament this Irish team could qualify for. I guess you're at an advantage in that you're not like some of the elder players in the team, that this may or may not be one of their last opportunities to play at a major tournament for Ireland. And even speaking to Katie McCabe there, I mean, she would have been looking with mixed emotions to her Arsenal teammates playing in the World Cup, you know, happy for them, but also wish she'd been there. How important is it for this Irish team and for yourself that this team gets to the Euros next summer?
Obviously, the squad has players of all ages, which is what you need. If you're good enough, you're old enough, and you see there's been younger players coming through different squads, and nothing has changed. But in terms of how important it is for us to qualify, we do feel that this is the best opportunity that we've ever had to qualify, in terms of the squad that we have, in terms of the players that we have available, but also in terms of the draw that we got and the position that we've put ourselves in from the first three games. So obviously we're looking to build on that, and it is still in sight. So it's very important that the two massive games now over the next couple of days, obviously the first one being the Greece game, all we're looking for is 3 points, and we're looking to improve on the last Greece game for that. So in terms of that, because we're in such a good position that we've put ourselves in, and also the resources available to us, it's important that we build on that and we utilise that, and ultimately that is, we want to qualify for Euro 21.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Yeah, Ireland and Brighton striker Rhianna Jarrett there in conversation with Shane Hannan. Of course, Republic of Ireland have a huge European qualifier against Greece tomorrow night in Tala. Tickets still available. You want to be there. Ticketmaster.ie is where you get those tickets. Right, Kieran Donaghy joins us next on OTB AM to talk football. First, here's Nicky Brennan on last night's Off the Ball. He reckons teams involved in a brawl on a GAA pitch should face severe sanctions.
You can't argue with the facts. These things have been going on, and there's been a level of indiscipline that simply cannot be tolerated. In the overall scheme of things, I suppose it is in the minority, but I totally would not argue with anything you're saying there. Those incidents are very unsavoury incidents and cast a very dark shadow on the association. As well as that, the GAA has over a long period of time addressed quite a number of those issues, but you know as well as I do that as soon as there is a penalty imposed, and Ed alluded to there a minute ago, people will start looking at how we can appeal this, how we can get out of this. They bring ambiguity then and confuse, because there's a different body that's going to hear the appeal from the body that actually issued the penalty in the first place, or the suspension. So we actually have, I believe, a problem in our association in that regard, in that the whole process gets muddied the further it goes along, and people are not prepared to accept responsibility for their actions. I mean, yes, we could try and change the rules, that if something like this happens, that it automatically means that if a team is found to have been guilty of doing something, they're immediately kicked out of that particular competition that they're in. And maybe it's time we did have something like that, and maybe that's the only way that we're going to deal with the matter, particularly as you had on Saturday night, when it is very difficult to actually identify the people who are mainly culpable for what actually started the free-for-all in the first place.
Kieran Donaghy, a very good morning to you.
Morning, everyone. How are you?
Very well. Nicky Brennan there with some strong stuff, suggesting that perhaps teams should be thrown out if these sort of things are seen again. What's your view on all of that in terms of the brawl on Saturday night and the lack of punishment now that is going to be handed down as a result of inconclusive video evidence?
Yeah, it's a hard one. It's a hard one to control. Really, it's two teams going down a tunnel. The game is really tight. It's a tough night. It's a dog fight, and you're trying not to take a backward step. And something was said, and two fellas hopped off each other. And next thing, there's a bit of a melee. I don't see how, bar the referees, maybe a linesman going into the tunnel first and having a clear view of what's going on and taking names and sending off five or six fellas after half time. I think Nicky's probably a bit over the top with kicking teams out. Brawls have happened in every sporting code. We saw it with Munster in the rugby last week. There's a bit of a brawl. There's a few punches thrown. You know, it shouldn't be normalised. It's not good, obviously, but it's high-level sport. It's two kinds of teams that don't want to take a backward step, and sometimes it's going to spill out into something like this. But maybe getting somebody down the tunnel first mightn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, it seemed that this was a very big trend around the winter of 2018, when there was every second week you'd have a video from a club match, and we had kind of siphoned it off as this issue that exists in parochial rivalries between games inside a county rather than these big intra-county games. Like, this is live in television on a Saturday night. It's fairly high profile.
Yeah, it is fairly high profile. And, you know, I think a lot of it comes out of, you know, players, when they care and when something's very important to them, it can often spill out into something like that. And, you know, it is unfortunate, but it's going to be hard to see the day where it never happens, in all levels, whether it's high profile games in Croke Park or it's your Division 5 County League final where two teams have trained all year. I think it's the amount of effort as well the teams are putting into training these days that it becomes that much more important to them to try and fulfill what the potential and how hard they've trained all year to win something. And it becomes a win at all costs mentality, and as long as that mentality is there, you're going to have it spill over at stages. How can they control it? I would say anybody that throws a punch, and as soon as an argument breaks out, that umpires and linesmen get around it and start taking names. And if it becomes clear that if you're in a melee and you're throwing punches, you're going to be sent off and you're going to get a lengthy ban for it. So, you know, that's, you know, if it's a final at the end of the year for a club guy, he misses the next, you know, six games or whatever the following season. And I know Nicky says people will contest that. But, you know, maybe referees' reports after melee like that will have to be very thorough and detailed. And they'll have to come together as a kind of an officiating team and be ready to take names and take notes of what's going on in the melee. And and hopefully as it breaks up that they have a fair idea of who the main culprits were. Because you're always going to have a few fellas trying to break it up and pull guys out of it. And you're going to have a few fellas that are around sledging. And, you know, it's about trying to manage that and officiate it right.
And maybe the added responsibility that sideline officials can have as a result of the rule passed at Congress last weekend might be able to help with that as well. It is another rule passed at Congress that we want to chat about firstly today, Kieran, because this back pass rule is something that I think it's fair to say slipped between the cracks. There was 2 minutes of debate put into this rule. We can get into whether or not this is the correct process of getting the rule in, but let's perhaps start with the rule itself. Are you in favour of it?
My in favour of it, I am, because I think it's often used. I wouldn't say the keeper tips it out to a full back and takes it off his shoulder and bursts out into the middle of the field. So I've often seen it used late on in games where you tip it out to a cornerback and you get it back and you're taking 3 or 4 solos and you're trying to draw teams on, and it's a bit of a time wasting kind of exercise, and it's a game management, I would say, use of possession. So I don't have any major issue with it. I don't think it's going to be the end of shot kickouts. I don't think it's going to be the end of keeper involvement. I think keepers are going to become much more involved. If you see the likes of, you know, especially Morgan the last day, he didn't do too much of it on returned kickouts straight to him. I think he had 2, but the rest of the time he was just getting involved, just getting out wide, becoming the extra man for his team, making it 7-on-6 coming out. And he was able to kind of get the Tyrone team into the gale of breeze out the pitch well, and I still think you're going to see that. And I think keepers will still go short, and I think it still may encourage more long ball out to the middle, and maybe more accurate long ball set plays out there, getting it where you're getting it on the 65 and you're turning towards goal. And I think that's going to be, at the end of the day, a more exciting game for the fans. And you're going to have probably a few more 50-50 balls out around the middle between guys going up trying to fetch it, which is, you know, one of the greatest skills in GAA and something that we all want to see more of, and something that is, since they brought the mark in, we're getting a bit more of it. Mm. And it is an exciting factor of the game. So I don't necessarily have a major issue with the rule. I don't think it's going to hugely affect goalkeepers. I'm not a goalkeeper. Maybe they like to tap it out and get it back. Or maybe they like the option that if they can go short and a fella runs in and gets it and there's a defender close on him, that he can slip it back to him and the keeper can then become involved. I think that's a more game tactically than the game that we could do without, to be honest.
Yeah, it's interesting then, kind of with regards to what happened at Congress on Friday night. And to be honest with you, Kieran, I'm actually on your side. I think this is a good rule. I think it might benefit the game positively, but it's still only got 2 minutes of conversation. It's still coming on the back of a league where we're seeing a new set of rules come in for the second time, that it had to go through a process of being trialled out in the league last year, was dumped for the Championship, and now is brought back in for the full year this year. It's unusual to have different rules being plucked from different sources and then being thrown into the game automatically for the Championship. And then on top of that, you had the whole hurling black card situation on Friday, which had such exercise debate on both sides of defence of this. It was played out well in the media, lots of pundits coming out to defend the game of hurling. The football conversations quite often just kind of get left there, and they don't often have a very strong voice for or against the game, as they do, say, with the UNESCO status of hurling that was brought up so much on Friday night.
Yeah, I think that was a major one. I think hurling is a warrior game, and even if you look at a game of hurling, and I heard Tommy Walsh last week on OTVAM saying, that the refs need to stop blowing the whistle as much. But you very little play acting in hurling. It is a kind of a more physical game. They get away with more. They're able to do a bit more pulling and dragging when they're tackling. They're able to get more pressure on. There's a bit more that G's up the crowd a bit more. And I can see why. They came out so strongly against it. Why have they come out so strongly against it? Because I think you see in the GAA, the black card doesn't work. We've talked about it long enough. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the sin bin that they have now or whether it was the format they had of it last year, it simply doesn't work. You still have managers with 5 minutes to go when teams are trying to get back into game. You still have managers telling fellas to take black cards. And as long as that is in, it defeats the purpose of the rule, because it's... You're still encouraging cynical play with 5 minutes to go or 7 minutes to go, and you have a 4 or 5 point lead. If a guy breaks through on goal inside the 21 before he gets to the penalty spot, I'd say you'd be still told to take him down. Don't let him through one-on-one. So yeah, the rule doesn't work. And I'd say the hurling people saw that, and I'd say they said, no, lads, not for us. We don't need this in our game. And rightfully came out and defended it.
Just on that, Kieran, is there a slight concern here that there isn't enough of a debate around these football rules that are actually going to have a material impact on the game?
Yeah, there probably is. Yeah, maybe there should be a bit more kick up of it. And, I think if there's any more, I think football people right now are sick of rule changes. They're sick of tweaking our game. They're sick of messing around with it. I'm sick of it. And I think a lot of the fans are sick of it. They just want to be left play the game that we loved since we were young. They want to be left, get on with it, and just get back to just. I think we're going over the top with a lot of the stuff we're bringing in, and it is, you spoke about Congress, and 2 minutes to bring in a rule that greatly, has a big difference for goalkeepers in their game, and the way they may like to play. And there could be teams out there that wanted to play 1-2s with the keepers all day that we don't know about yet, because they were probably keeping it for Championship or something that has majorly affected them now. So, maybe the football people do have to come out, and maybe the next time that they're trying to bring in new rules and changes, we should be kicking up more of a fuss about it.
Is the slew of rule changes a reaction to Dublin's dominance over the last few years, because of Dublin's dominance being predicated in part, only a fraction, but in part to Stephen Cluxton and his revolutionary kick-out technique, that you had a mark being brought in to encourage high fielding. You now have the goalkeeper not getting the return pass immediately from his defender. Is this all just a little bit too reactive in terms of what we've seen?
I don't think so. No, I think Stephen Cluxton rarely plays 1-2s. I would say his forte was that he was hitting fellas 60 yards from goals, which is, I think, what the new rule will encourage actually. And you know, his thing was patterns of movement by his players out the field, and he was a great man to put it into space, and is a great man to put it into space onto the run of players. So I don't think it's, you know, I think the mark was something where we were getting very, very little, maybe 7 or 8 50-50 kickouts a game out to the middle of the field in a championship game, which became boring to watch. It became a complete running game. So I think the mark has just encouraged people to put it out there a bit more. And look, as I said earlier on, and what makes hurling so exciting, so many 50-50 balls, so many long diagonal balls in around the house, out the corners, two fellas going for it, an absolute war zone to get your hands in possession. That's what people love about hurling. And I think, you know, the mark from the kick out has worked. And I think the other mark could have worked as well, but they made a bit of a balls of it, the way they brought it in and the tweaks they made to it. If they'd left it as simple as a 30 or 40 metre pass, which would actually just encourage a long ball into your full forward line from the 45 rather than this 20 yard ding pass that we're seeing now, I think that could have brought a great level of excitement to the game as well. And a reward for a player going up in a crowd of players and catching it and landing on the ground and being able to take a mark and tap it over the bar. I think that would have been a great thing for people to see. Although in its current format, I can see major flaws with it.
Yeah, we are seeing, though, on this level, especially in the kickouts, some unreal football. I think that passage of play in Donegal-Monaghan on Sunday was just fascinating. The way Monaghan pressed all the way up on the Donegal kickout because Sean Patton was kicking into a wind, and Sean Patton backs himself, kicks it all over the Monaghan players. Rory Began takes a black card. Donegal score a goal. Just a breakdown of a fascinating tactical approach in terms of pressing against the kick out and unbelievable execution from the goalkeeper. This is the sort of game we want to see in the modern era.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, we were talking about, you know, different ways to approach the game, and you know, Tony McEntee was saying that there's only a, you know, don't mix it up too much. The press shows you the press you can do from set plays, but I think you can also do it from open play. And if you push your team up and say, look, make a rule that look like you're always 70 yards behind the ball. So if the ball's in with the corner forward, your whole team is kind of pushed up, ready to press. It can be something that's used to get you back into a game. So you're losing a game by 7 or 8 points with 20 minutes to go, and you need to generate momentum. You need to generate getting the ball back. Certainly looking at these type of presses can work both, as I said, from set plays and open play. It was fascinating the last day. You know, Patton, we played against him this year with the Tralee IT, and we were using presses at different stages, and he was playing with the Garda College, and I was slow at certain stages to go into the press because of, I know the boot he has and I know how long he can kick it. And of course, it's a huge danger. And the one mistake the Monaghan lads made the last day is when you're that last line of that press, you cannot let the ball go over your head. So you have to be punching that ball back in. I think the two Monaghan fellas got caught up in each other and wrestling with guys, and it allowed it to clear them, and it bounced and away Monaghan went. And it is a huge risk or reward tactic, but it is great to see it being used more. And I think it will add a lot to the game because it does generate excitement. And as I said, there's various times you use it. You use it when maybe the game is level with 20 minutes gone and you want to try and get a bit of momentum before halftime and you slap it on. But look, it's been used in basketball for centuries. The press has been always a risk and rewarding game. When you put it on in basketball, teams can dice it up and cut through you and get an easy layup, and everybody's kind of looking around going, oh, well, that didn't work. But then you have a press on where you get 3 steals in a row and they turn it over 2 times and they're forced to call a timeout. Well, you don't really have a timeout in GAA. So if you can get it right and you can have your guys in the right position and you can have it, you know, the rules fairly well set down where fellas are supposed to go and what way the keeper goes when he's kicked out. What is the plan of attack on the ball? What's the plan of attack on weak side? What are your two safety guys doing at the back? What's your goalkeeper doing? We saw Rory Began probably did most things right the last day, really. Bart just take down the guy. I think he kind of half went to take him down and then didn't. And, you know, still got the black card, but they still went through and walked it into an open goal. And, you know, we conceded a goal against UL this year with something similar. And but, you know, we stayed in it and we got it back. And, you know, we ended up getting a draw out of the game when we needed to come back. So it is something that can be used. And of course, it's something that is... it is fascinating to look at. But yeah, look, we have great talents and goals, and goalkeeper now is, you can nearly say, is the most important position on the field. And even I couldn't get to the Kerry game the last day because I had a basketball game that night. Looking at what Kerry did, and I know Shane Ryan came out the field at one stage and he just made a slappy hand pass and turned it over, and Mayo ended up getting a goal. And, you know, the Radio Kerry guys lost their mind about what was our goalkeeper doing 40 yards out from goal. And, you know, we've moved on from that.
It was a fantastic finish from the Mayo player, let's not forget.
Like, 100% a great goal. And, like, you know, Shane Ryan is an absolutely unbelievable full forward. He is a class footballer. He can dummy sort of the ball with two legs. He's got great awareness. He's a fantastic kicker. You know, Kerry should look to maybe even use him more in this role. And if you see a player like Niall Morgan who plays in goals plays midfield for his club, Eden Dark at stages, you know, Kerry may look at doing something like that with Shane Ryan and getting him more involved in the play. And, you know, there's obviously safety features. If he comes out one of the corner backs on the opposite side, is to slip into goals. And if you turn it over, there shouldn't be a major case of panic. All you want to do is not give away. Turnovers happen all the time in the game. What you don't want to happen is what happened to Kerry the last day, is that they get a goal out of it. Mm-hmm. I think anything else is okay. It's general play. It's going to happen. But if you have a spare man in goals and you can make it 7-on-6 coming out of defence and you can get your guys to hug the touchline and create space for maybe mobile midfielders and your fullback and your centre-back and your goalie and make that a 5-on-4, and keep your Gavin White and your speedsters on the wings, that if anybody cheats in, that Shane Ryan can hit it over the top to them and away they go. You know, I think it's something that Kerry should look to exploit. You know, Shane Ryan is a fantastic footballer and he's a very good goalkeeper. And I think we should try and use those two together and try and use it as much to our advantage as we can, the fact that he's a completely gifted outfield player.
Just very quickly then, Kieran, how concerned are you for Mayo?
Look, Mayo do this to us every year. You know, not last year. I think Mayo will be okay. I think Mayo will be thereabouts. Killian O'Connor is a massive guy to need to get back. You know, I've said it before. Especially with the Mark now, I look at Aidan O'Shea more at full forward. I think he can re-galvanise the Mayo GA and the public, being a full forward and leading the line from there and kicking scores and inspiring his teammates. I think they have enough guys around the middle when Shamey O'Shea comes back and they'll have Tom Parsons out there. Dermot O'Connor can play in the middle of the field. And I'd be looking at Killian and Aidan O'Shea inside. And of course, you don't just leave them inside. But I think there's certain times in the game where you might look to go more direct. With the mark, you might look to go with a high ball goes in the top fade, no shade, there's going to be panic and pandemonium. And there was one put in last day in the first half into him, and Kerry were lucky that Paul Murphy was back as a sweeper, because everybody else looked like sixes and sevens underneath that high ball. And you know, if you have a goal poacher like Killian O'Connor playing off him, you know, that can be something that can just change. Like, yeah, look, we know Aidan O'Shea can play around the middle of the field and get on a load of ball and tackle and kind of dictate the mood of the game and be under kickouts. But I think there might be something. But I wouldn't overly rule them out by any stretch of the imagination. And they're going to have a big battle in Connacht. They're going to go in as massive underdogs this year if they come up against Galway. So yeah, it's I wouldn't rule out. They always try and find a way to come good, and you might find it last year, but there's been 7 or 8 years before that where they're always there or thereabouts.
True, yeah, that underdog tag for the Galway game is exactly what they want as well. Listen, Kieran Donaghy, thanks a million for taking the call.
Sound on, I'll talk to you.
Right, just a reminder tonight that Off the Ball are live from the Camden Bar for a football team looked ahead to the Cheltenham Festival. Nathan Murphy will be joined by Kenny Cunningham and Stephen Hunt for some football chat, as well as a lighter look to one of the biggest weeks of the year in sport, racing royalty Johnny Murta and Katie Walsh. We'll also be joined on the night by Paddy Power himself and tipping expert Frank Hickey. It's an exclusive off-air event, so if you want to go, there are very few tickets left. You've got to go to offtheball.com/events to pick them up. That is us for this Wednesday morning on OTB AM. As always, we'll be back tomorrow morning from 7:30, where you can watch on our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/offtheball or on OTB Sports Radio. You can get that on offtheball.com/radio or on the Go Loud app, which you can download now. Kenny Cunningham will be with us in studio tomorrow morning. We're chatting to Dublin Camogie star Laura Toomey. And to be honest with you, we've no idea if Ger Gilroy will be in. See you.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if you've ever heard of coronavirus, but we reckon there hasn't been enough coverage of coronavirus on this station. So with our medical background, we thought we'd get to the bottom of it. Forget Wuhan. Six Nations rugby matches are being cancelled. I mean, this is serious, right?
Yeah, I mean, COVID-19 is the actual name of the disease. And look, it's absolutely everywhere. Everywhere you go, the shops, the pubs, the streets, social media, you know, I mean, it really has gone viral.
Is that a joke?
No.
Okay, so I think I have coronavirus. What should I do?
Do you?
No, no, it's a text from one of our very clever, intelligent listeners and viewers. There's actually quite a few questions coming in. Can I catch coronavirus from supergluing my tongue to my lip? Is it okay to sneeze into someone else's elbow? Should I just ignore anyone who has probably been to Italy? Is Milano Pizzeria safe? Well, you know, I don't know. Well, I don't know the answer to any of those questions, but I think you can probably get up to whatever you want as long as you wash your hands afterwards. That'd be my take on it. You're welcome. Okay, well, some people are clearly very worried in the States. It's been reported that 38% of Americans in this survey say they will never buy Corona beer again because of coronavirus. Coronavirus, Corona beer, are you really? Are you seriously? Is it really true? Is it survey? You know?
Yeah, I mean, not buying Corona beer because of coronavirus is like, you know, being afraid to go bowling during the Ebola epidemic or, you know, not buying shirts for fear of catching cholera.
Yeah. So Ireland-Italy is the only game in the entire Six Nations that's cancelled. I mean, this is outrageous. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean, all the other fixtures are taking place. I mean, how can this happen? You know, how can this happen?
Well, how can this happen? How can this happen?
Yeah, which is spreading faster, coronavirus or hysteria about coronavirus, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we need Bono to sort this whole thing out. I mean, he did visit the Irish rugby team.
Yeah, that worked out well. Yeah, up until last week, the only question being asked more often than how do I know I have coronavirus was, what the hell happened against England, right?
Yeah, and second thoughts, actually, maybe it's all Bono's fault. I mean, maybe his lyrics got inside Johnny Sexton's head. I mean, it certainly looked like that when Ben Youngs kicked through for the first try. You know, maybe Bono was like inside Johnny's head and Johnny was kind of singing to himself, you know, if I twist and turn away, if I could, you know, I would, if I could, I would let it go. And he did let it go. That's why George Ford scored.
Yeah, I get it, yeah.
Yeah, and then after that, Johnny Sexton, he looked like he was going a bit mad, you know, like, you know, singing to himself. You could kind of see he was in his eyes. He was going crazy. He was probably, you know, singing to himself, I'm wide awake, I'm wide awake, I'm not sleeping, you know, because he knew he was having a mare and he wouldn't sleep that night, you know. And I mean, I can't 100% verify that's what was going on inside Johnny Sexton's head, but I wouldn't be surprised, and I would say I'm pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, who do you get into the Irish camp now after Bono? I mean, after Bono, who? Who has the charisma, the style, the gravitas, the Irishness?
Christa Berg?
Yeah, well, I mean, Bono talked about Irishness, so presumably Christa Berg would talk about Argentinianness.
Yeah, I mean, how can that fail? You know, never seen you look as lovely as you did tonight. Never seen you shine so bright. Our lady in red, my lady in red. Lady in red, my lady in red. And this is my favourite bit. Lady in red, my lady in red.
Thanks, Owen. Nice vocals. Well, there you have it. You know, Ireland, Italy, the only game been cancelled in the entire Six Nations of 2020. It's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, you have to say, it's also kind of ironic. Italian backs, they can't catch a cold, but they can certainly spread a virus. Thanks to Vodafone for our rugby coverage. Vodafone, team of us, everyone indoors. Certainly it is now. Bum-tsh.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.